whereas the others were slightly more non-committal, and you had to basically say, look, if a vote was your choice, if you voting would save the world, who would you vote for? And I think ChatGPT came out and said it would vote for the Green Party. And I think Gemini said, I'm an AI tool, I won't vote for anybody, which was its get out from that particular situation. But it is interesting how the views of people are being extolled via the chatbots. In the old days, it was newspapers and, you know, bosses of newspapers potentially having a view on what was covered in papers. But now the view of Elon Musk is being pushed on the masses that choose to use Grok as their chatbot of choice.
Oh, so we've got Grok is sort of right-wingish, Gemini yeah. is a bit wokey vegan, and ChatGPT's somewhere in the middle. We live in a crazy world. But Will Guyatt, thank you very much for joining
Cheers,
me there.
Dom.
Technology journalist, and in Swindon, we now know, which is very easy for me to find out. I'm doing this new character who's called the Crypto King, and basically I'm trying to pay people in ridiculous cryptocurrencies that don't exist, and I've called him the Crypto King of Dubai and Swindon, and I got AI ChatGPT to make me really quite a good hip-hop song with those lyrics. But all those, well, you have to go to my new YouTube channel, which is launching in February, and then you can hear that kind of stuff.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Good afternoon. It is 2 o'clock. I'm still Dom Jolly, and you are listening to Times Radio. Coming up in the next hour, we'll continue to bring you the latest on the aftermath of this terrible explosion at the ski resort in Switzerland. And if you were Keir Starmer, what would your New Year's resolutions be? First, the news with Laura Cook.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Several dozen people are believed to have been killed after a fire in a basement nightclub in the Swiss ski resort of Crans, Montana. Police have so far commented on claims by eyewitnesses that the roof of the venue was ignited by Roman candle sparklers, but they've confirmed that the incident wasn't being treated as terror-related. The Times reporter David Chazan has been listening to some of the eyewitness accounts.
Everyone panicked and the crowd just surged towards the door. They said they saw one young man writhing in agony on the floor, his body was badly burned, his hair had been burned, as well as his face, and they said they assumed that he must have died.
Under Swiss law, the number of victims can't be released until all the relatives of those killed or injured have been informed. The Foreign Office says it's ready to support any British nationals, although it's not yet had any requests for help. At a press conference, Matthias Reynard, president of Switzerland State Council, says the response is pulling in people from across the country.
We have several hundred people allocated to emergency response, care for the injured and coordination. We are also going to ask for international coordination. You can imagine that at a ski resort on New Year's Eve, there are many visitors from other countries, and that will raise a number of diplomatic issues.
More than 41,000 migrants crossed the English Channel in small boats in 2025. It's the second highest figure on record, surpassed only in 2022. Ukraine's president says a peace agreement with Russia is close, but emphasised his country wouldn't accept what he called a weak deal. In a New Year address, Volodymyr Zelensky warned the outstanding aspects will determine the fate of peace, Ukraine and Europe.
The peace agreement is 90% ready. 10% remains, and that is far more than just numbers. That 10% contains, in fact, everything.
Meanwhile, Russia claims 24 people have been killed and 50 others injured in a Ukrainian drone strike on a Russian-occupied village in Ukraine's Kherson region. Ukrainian officials haven't commented. A documentary about the King's call to revolution is being released as he hopes to spread his philosophy about humanity and nature to a new audience. A trailer has been broadcast on Amazon Prime for the feature-length film, which will be released to 240 countries. The documentary, narrated by Kate Winslet, tells the story of how, as Prince of Wales, Charles pursued environmentalism before it was mainstream concern, as well as the opposition he faced. Bulgaria has become the 21st nation to switch to the euro, leaving only a handful of countries in the European Union yet to adopt the currency. Bulgaria decided to abolish its old currency, the lev, despite opposition from half its electorate. Among those to have expressed optimism about the change is Ivyavlo Soritov, a market researcher from the capital, Sofia.
Many countries have adopted the euro, so there should not be any particular difficulties related to the eurozone. I support our entry. This is the last part of our integration into the European Union. I think the EU has given us a lot over the years, so I think it's a good step.
And 6 months after winning the Club World Cup, Chelsea and their head coach Enzo Maresca have parted company. Chelsea have won only one of their past seven Premier League matches, but their relationship with Maresca was soured after last month's home game against Everton. Despite a 2-0 win, he claimed he'd experienced the worst 48 hours of his tenure before the game. And for a roundup of news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Welcome back. Happy New Year. Thank you for spending your first afternoon of 2026 with me, Dom Jolly. I'm here till four, and our top story today, we are continuing to bring you developments on the explosion at a ski resort bar in Switzerland during their New Year's Eve celebrations after at least several dozen people are thought to have died and over 100 injured. In the past hour, Italy has made its major burns units available to ease capacity on hospitals in Switzerland. Responding to the news, the UK Foreign Office has said that they will be on standby to help any British nationals impacted. Joining us on the latest is Nina Dos Santos, former Europe editor at CNN. Nina, thanks for joining me. Did we learn anything new from the press conferences this morning?
Hi, Dom. Yes, well, we did. We learned that the death toll was actually quite a bit higher than had originally been forecast. We're now hearing reports that the death toll could be as high as 40 and that 100 people have been really seriously injured as a result of this fire and explosion that happened in this bar that has a 300-person capacity. So we're talking about at least half of the people who would have been there to ring in the new year having been affected either in some way, tragically, many of them losing their lives. And also we're hearing witness reports of people being really, really severely burnt. Now, there was a huge operation to try and get people out of the building. We're hearing reports of people breaking in, trying to drag people out while their hair was still on fire, handing them over to ambulances in very dramatic fashion that then have to make this torturous journey down the valleys towards the city hospitals nearby. In total, we know that 150 first responders were active overnight to try and rescue victims of this incident. 10 helicopters were dispatched and about 40 ambulances in total. The local hospitals are completely overwhelmed. And as you pointed out before, in the last hour or so, we've also heard that the city of Milan across the border in Italy has made its major burns unit available to try and help the Swiss authorities deal with what is a tragedy that hasn't been seen in this part of Switzerland for the last 20 years. The last time that they had to deal with something like this was when a school bus crashed in a tunnel and there was a fire and 22 children were very, very badly affected. Dozens of people lost their lives. In this case, when it comes to the age of the victims, because of course this happened at a New Year's Eve party, as you'd expect, they were young. There's been a report that the youngest victim who's in hospital in nearby Lausanne is only 16 years old and is very severely injured. The average age is believed to be between 16 and 26. And as you just pointed out briefly in your introduction before, a peculiarity of Swiss law is that they would have to identify all of the people who've lost their lives before being able to release a full death toll. And obviously that's going to be very difficult given the circumstances of people having been very badly burned.
And of course, presumably we know nothing about the nationality. There's supposed to be two French citizens, what we know. Do we know about the nationalities of the victims?
As yet, we don't. There have been reports, as you said, that the French government's been alerted to the fact that there were two reportedly two French citizens who may have lost their lives. Italy is also on alert to see whether or not any of its citizens have been affected. Britain, so far, the Foreign Office says that it hasn't yet been approached, but that could also be because this is a very chaotic situation, where, as I said before, identification of those who've lost their lives will be difficult. And also, some people who've been very badly burned may also, it may take some time to identify them as well when they regain consciousness. One of the interesting things that I should point out here is that in the press conference earlier on today, authorities said flat out they can rule out that this was any type of attack. What they can't rule out is whether or not this was a candle on the top of a champagne bottle. There's been speculation online that this fire may have been caused by somebody ordering a big bottle of champagne. You often see this in some of the flashy ski resorts in France with sparklers out of the top, and that could have ignited something. Now, interestingly enough, the Crans-Montana region just put out an alert 2 or 3 weeks ago saying we'd like to remind anybody coming to this region to remind you that fireworks are banned over the new year. And the Swiss lawmakers themselves just 10 days ago in Parliament actually started debating banning fireworks across Switzerland outright. So there'll be a big focus on whether or not this could have been a candle, whether or not this could have been caused by something else like an electrical failure, or whether tragically it could have been some kind of sparkler or pyrotechnic firework display or something indoors that could have ignited this terrible fire that then caused an explosion and may well have cost about 40 people their lives and left hundreds of other young people desperately injured.
Nina Dos Santos, their former Europe editor at CNN, just getting us up to speed on this terrible, tragic fire in Crans-Montana in Switzerland. Moving on now, 2025 was certainly an eventful year for politics, both here and abroad. Party leaders have been hoping to set the tone as they head into 2026. And in his New Year's address, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer promised the public that positive change will be coming and acknowledged that things have been tough. The Labour Party seemed to be on a sure footing when they first came into power, but the party's faced continued decline in the polls. Starmer will be heading into this year with an approval rating of minus 50%, the lowest ever recorded. And he'll be needing to focus on how to stave off challenges to his leadership, both from within his own party and the opposition. But could a replacement do any better? Now, with me now is the columnist Sonia Sodder, who's written a great column about this in the Times today. Sonia, thanks for joining me. Let's begin with Starmer's New Year message. It's a fairly pessimistic tone for a Prime Minister hoping to boost some optimism in his leadership.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's never good if a Prime Minister has to start off the year acknowledging that things have been really tough, but sort of promising people that they will get better. And those poll ratings that you reference, I think that shows a degree of scepticism amongst voters that Labour is going to be delivering positive change in the run-up to the next election.
The Unite boss, Sharon Graham, warned that simply swapping Starmer out for someone else might not help. So even if Starmer went, the sort of likely successors are apparently not acceptable. Who do you think might be acceptable for Sharon Graham?
Well, Sharon Graham is well known for being left-wing, for criticising the Labour government from the left. That's her position. So I would imagine that she would be gunning more for a leader that comes from the soft left. So somebody like Angela Rayner and Andy Burnham were there to be a leadership election. However, I do think that warning shot she fired was quite interesting because although I don't share her politics, I think she's really put her finger on something there, as I say in the column in the Times today, which is that with Starmer, the problems aren't just superficial. He is a very bad communicator. He comes across as quite inauthentic and wooden. But that is not the only issue. The issue is a lack of policy substance that's delivering positive change as well. And so if Labour's going to have a leadership election, and indeed it looks pretty likely that it might happen at some point this year, it's not a cert, but it may happen, The problem is going to be is that you're going to get different leadership contenders vying to take the top spot while Labour is in government, and those circumstances are not conducive to the party having a kind of hard look at itself and thinking, well, we won this big majority 2024. Why are we having to change leader, you know, barely a couple of years in, if that's when it happens? So I'm a bit sceptical that a change of leader is going to fix Labour's more fundamental problem, which is that it never really had an agenda for government, and it's not been able to explain to people what it is.
And if we compare Farage and Starmer, Farage's rhetoric for his policies is clear and direct. You suggest it's Labour's lack of a clear agenda impacting them. I think it's a comms problem as well, which is why it's not just Starmer. You know, even if they did have some sort of agenda, they seem incapable of actually communicating it to people. What can they do? How can he turn it round?
Well, you're right. It's both a comms problem and a substance problem. The comms problem, I mean, I don't think Starmer, I think Starmer, his ratings are now so bad, I just don't think there's any way that he could personally turn it around with the electorate. I think if Labour wants to have a chance at that, they absolutely have to switch leader before the next election. And, you know, there are better communicators in the cabinet. There's no question about that. And indeed, you know, outside Parliament, if you look at somebody like Andy Burnham, So I do think the comms problem, it's not easily fixed, because having a leadership election while you're in government and having members select the next prime minister, it's not a great look, to be honest. So it's not easily fixed, but it is fixable. Where I'm more sceptical is on the substance side, because I think while you've got better communicators in the cabinet, it's not clear that any of them have got an agenda in a way that Starmer didn't. And that is partly because, so you've, you know, you look at somebody like Farage, the reason why it's much easier for him to communicate is because he's an outsider and he's saying, you know, this lot, I messed it up. I've got some ideas. Personally, I do not think that, reducing immigration is a solution to the country's structural economic problems. But that is his pitch, and it will resonate with some people. It's much more difficult to make that sort of pitch while you're in government, because people quite fairly expect to see results. And the issue that the government faces is that this is not the 2000s. We're not living in a world where the city is powering growth. There are increasing tax revenues as a result. So a Labour government has got money to spend on public services. People's real wages are going up. So everything feels better, and it feels like the country is on an upward trajectory. The problem Labour faces is that the economy is stagnant. Living standards have been stagnant for the last 20 years. People do not feel like things are getting better, and there aren't quick fixes to that, because that comes from long-term structural economic issues that have been made worse from policy decisions such as Brexit. So there are tough trade-offs ahead of us, facing us as a country, because the economy is not growing in the way that we might hope, and it's quite difficult to create a pitch for Labour out of that.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to be the time of the anti-candidate, doesn't it? Because Labour, in a sense, got in as an anti-Tory, just anyone but the Tories, and again, just had nothing once they got in. And the same thing with Reform is an anti-everything, an anti-establishment. The key indicator is going to be the local elections in May. Reform UK polling high in Wales, Scotland an interesting one to watch. What can we expect from Labour, do you think?
I think it's going to be a really difficult set of elections for Labour, because the poll ratings nationally, and that includes, you know, Scotland and Wales, areas where there are going to be elections, London, you know, the national trend is Labour is in government and it's not performing and voters are unhappy. So it's going to end up being quite a punishing set of elections, I think. Yeah.
So Labour in government but not in power. Going into 2026, you were giving advice to Starmer and the Labour government. What would it be?
I think it would be, I mean, it is genuinely really difficult. I would personally recommend being more honest with voters and saying, look, this is where the country is. There are tough trade-offs here. We've got an ageing population. if we want the public services that the public expects, we might need to have to pay more for them. But, you know, that isn't an attractive message. It's not an easy message to prosecute. So I sort of think that that's why Labour is in the mess that it is, because it kind of took the easy road out going into 2024, as you sort of hinted at, as I wrote in the column. They got elected, Labour got elected, by not saying very much in the run-up to that election. They mopped up the disaffection and the fact that voters really cheesed off with the Conservative government. That is what got Labour and Keir Starmer elected. There's no love for Labour in the electorate. But and it was the easy way to get elected, and they scored a big majority, you know, not out of a very high vote share, but they got a big majority out of it. But the problem is that there was a message there which was, you know, it's all the last lot, just vote for us. That the implication was, we're so competent, we can fix these issues, you know, quite quickly, give us 5 years and things will be feeling better going into the next election. And unfortunately for Labour, the economic predictions are not saying that that's what's going to happen.
Sonia Soda, who wrote a great column today about all this in the Times. So thank you very much for joining me there. Coming up, if you're unlike me and not at work on this bank holiday for New Year's Day, then you may be wondering what TV to binge. I will take you through the best picks. Do keep sending me your thoughts on anything we've been speaking about today. You can WhatsApp us on 0333 003 2353. You can text 87222, start your message with the word Times, or you can email us studio@times.radio. It is 2:18, and this is Dom Jolly on Times Radio.
Jeff Norcott on Times Radio.
I'm Jeff Norcott, and this week, Friday Night with Norcott is back. In Five Stories with a Funny Friend, the brilliant comedian Simon Evans will join me to mop up all those news stories you missed in that bit between Christmas and New Year. I'll also be speaking to Peter Cardwell about the big stories that will shape the political landscape in 2026. Consumer expert Harry Kind will talk to us about Sunshine Saturday. Say that after a couple of sherries. That day of the year where we're so depressed by the prospect of January in the UK that we all book holidays abroad. That's news, reviews, comedy and interviews in this week's Friday Night with Norcott.
Jeff Norcott, tomorrow night from 7 on Times Radio.
Cancer Research UK is funding the breakthroughs that matter. Did you know that over the past 50 years, their work has helped double cancer survival in the UK? Cancer Research UK science expert Dr. Sam Godfrey talks about the breakthroughs that could change the lives of people affected by cancer.
One of the breakthroughs that I'm so excited about is that our scientists discovered that the human papillomavirus actually caused almost all cervical cancers and a number of other cancers too. This has meant we've been able to develop a vaccine, and that is now expected to prevent almost 90% of cervical cancers in the UK. With screening as well, we think we're going to get to a point where we can stop almost all cervical cancers, and we're going to see a future where cervical cancer is effectively eradicated. It's such an exciting thing, and it just scratches the surface of what really is the golden age of research.
Witness more incredible research breakthroughs in Cancer Detectives, Finding the Cures, brought to you by Cancer Research UK. Stream now on Channel 4. Cancer Research UK is a registered UK charity.
Listen to Times Radio at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day. This is Times Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to me, Dom Jolly, with you till 4 o'clock. Now let's turn to what we can look forward to watching on the telly on this chilly bank holiday. Plenty for you to get your teeth into. And to run us through some of her top picks, I'm joined by the film and TV critic Ashanti Omkar. Hello, Ashanti.
Hello, Dom. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Are you sort of sitting on your sofa watching stuff, or are you
I am.
Okay. So what have we got to watch today? I mean, the first thing, The Traitors. I'm very excited by that. I'm a massive Traitors fan, have been right from the beginning. I'm not a Johnny-come-lately on the celebrity Traitors. But it's going to be a bit different, this one. Claudia Winkleman hinting might be a bit more savage.
Yes. Well, they've got a retired police detective, a psychologist and a crime writer as part of the 22 people that are taking part in the competition. So usually it's about 25 people. So they've made it tighter, and it's going to be very exciting, I think. And you're right. They've kept it very under wraps. None of us know what's going to happen till we start tuning in.
I have to say, I don't think anything will be, I can't remember what series of The Traitors it was, but when one of the traitors, a non-celebrity traitor, announced that her occupation was psychic, and I thought, well, this is going to be good. I mean, she's going to walk this, and she just absolutely had zero psychic ability. So I'm hoping for more of that sort of thing.
Yes, I think there'll be a lot of drama for sure. I guess the psychologist is the one I'm keeping my eye on, because I guess they might have much more knowledge about how this whole system will work and what the contestants are like and who might be the traitor. So let's wait and see. This is a very interesting one indeed. Season 4, it's definitely a show that's much loved by the whole of the UK.
It really is. But I think people are very brave coming on when they are things like psychologists and stuff, because if they don't manage to read people, that's kind of their whole career sort of a bit pointless. I mean, one of the things I think of when I watch The Traitors is how worried I would be if I was judged by a jury, because you realise that people's impressions of people are made up almost instantly. They're obviously, a lot of the time they're just made following the crowd, or they're made on something very superficial. It's kind of a frightening indictment of people somehow.
Oh, yes. And especially in this age of social media, where people can make a judge, jury and executioner just sitting at their home as keyboard warriors. It's definitely a scary show to be on. I certainly wouldn't be so keen to be on it.
Let's move on to ITV's offering for New Year's Day. The second series of Red Eye, something I'm not familiar with, starts today. Shall we hear some of it?
There's been a murder in the US embassy. Hannah, I need you.
Yes, Mom.
That's the one thing clear. I'm running things, and you answer to me.
Feel better? If we don't find the killer soon, anyone could be next.
Put the embassy on immediate lockdown.
The clock is literally ticking.
Someone is helping him.
There's no way out of this.
Well, that all sounds very exciting. I've no idea what's going on. What is it?
This one has Jing Lucy. She plays DC Hannah Lee, and in the first season of this show, it was quite a breakthrough in some ways for ITV, because they brought, you know, an East Asian central character, British East Asian central character, and Jing Lucy plays this character very well. She plays a really, really savvy detective, and in season one, Richard Armitage, who is, you know, the king of New Year's Day, I always say, because you'll see him normally on Netflix, but he's not in season two. We've got a new person in season two with Martin Compson, who is in Line of Duty, and he plays Dr. Matthew Nolan. And this is all about how, you know, these are British people who've been potentially put on the spotlight because they are suspected of doing something wrong. Have they done something wrong? Have they not? This is what Jing Lucy and her character DC Hannah Lee has to find out and unveil through the course of the series.
I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure they've definitely done something wrong. Everyone's done something wrong. Is this ITV's answer to The Night Manager?
In some ways, yes. Yes, I would say that they've created something very compelling. It's a little bit like Hijack on Apple TV also, that stars Idris Elba. These are all shows that make you feel quite claustrophobic because they're happening, you know, in a closed space. And this one is going to be a very, very interesting one indeed.
Not to be confused with actually rather an old but very good movie called Red Eyes, starring a very young, as far as I remember, Cillian Murphy. As quite a dodgy person on a plane, but I don't want to ruin it. But that was Red Eye. So that's Red Eye today on ITV. We've also Netflix, of course, because who watches TV anymore? Netflix wouldn't be a New Year's Day without them releasing a new Harlan Coben murder mystery adaptation. And this year, we're blessed with Runaway, starring Ruth Jones and my friend Jimmy Nesbitt. Excellent. Let's hear a clip.
I was extremely funny.
Ew. Dad, can somebody please muzzle him when we meet my hall mates?
One, two, three.
Get out of the way! What the hell are you doing? Paige! Paige!
I'm afraid you need to leave. This is a crime scene.
I'm a PI. I'm working with the police.
I'm Detective Fag Benley.
I really need to speak to your daughter.
I don't know where she is. She's missing.
Oh, it's all so exciting. What's the mystery in Runaway all about?
Well, this one is all about a father whose runaway daughter is missing. His daughter has got she's got some problems. She has been mixing with the wrong kind of guy, and she has kind of disappeared from the life of this father. This James Nesbitt plays the father very, very well. He plays the father, and Minnie Driver plays his wife.
Oh, I love Minnie Driver.
Oh, yes, she's fantastic in this. And they play a very well-to-do couple who've had, you know, this problematic daughter, and she has run away. What happens when that happens? And the father is desperately seeking to search for his daughter. And this takes us into a police drama. Alfred Enoch plays, as you heard in the trailer, he plays the detective there, Fag Benley. And Lucien Musmati is also in this one. So it's got a good cast. It doesn't have Richard Armitage, who is, you know, the one we would expect to see in a Harlan Coben, adaptation. But this one keeps us very wrapped. Let's just say that at the end of the first episode, there is a big cliffhanger, and you just want to keep watching.
There we go. Now, Sir David Attenborough has broadcast from pretty much all corners of the globe to bring nature and wildlife into our homes. But he is, you know, he's getting on a little bit, isn't he? So this year, he's doing it from his doorstep in the BBC's Wild London. Can we hear a snippet?
London, my home and a city full of hidden natural wonders. You can find animals with extraordinary ways of surviving in new and alien spaces.
You hear that? When it comes to discovering the wonders of nature, there really is no place like home.
Well, that sounds good. Interesting. I wonder what wildlife can be found in London. See me, urban foxes. Maybe we're talking about Susan Martin, who wrote in, and her inflatable weightlifting seagull. What's he looking at?
He's looking at animals. Again, I had not expected this because, of course, you see foxes. We have them. We live in Greenwich and we see lots of them walking around. But, you know, there's obviously deer in London. There's lots of pigeons all the time, parakeets. There's quite a lot there that we get to see. It's just the way he narrates it. I think that's what I sit there and say, this is perfect for family viewing. I would like everyone to sit here and listen to this man. He's such a national treasure. And here he is giving us, you know, London's wildlife. You don't think of London's having so much wildlife, but it has a lot more than I expected.
And just finally, as we're wrapping up, just looking ahead to 2026, I'm excited by this. I went to a theme party on this, Rivals season 2 on Disney Plus. They haven't got the release date out yet, but what are we expecting?
Well, let's just expect a lot more drama,
a lot more romping,
a lot more drama. Obviously, we said goodbye to Dame Jilly Cooper, it was very sad because I had been at they'd done a special screening where she came to see the first episode. You know, the first episode of the first season. And at that point, no one knew it would get a renewal. And she was very happy with how they'd adapted her writing. And it's just going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of smart, a lot of drama. And it just will keep us smiling. We have a lot going on in the world that is so dark. And
here we
have David Tennant and Danny Dyer and Aidan Turner.
That's what we want. 2026, we need bonkbusters and stuff. That's fantastic. Ashanti Omkar, their film and TV critic, thank you so much for taking us through your choices for 25 and 26. What got you riled up for no reason in 2025? I'll be speaking to The Times' Robert Crampton about his unbelievably long list of entertaining, annoying things. And you can WhatsApp us on 0333 003 2353. You can text 87222, start your message with the word Times, or email us studio@times.radio. But I'm telling you, there's almost nothing that Robert misses out. First, the headlines with Laura Cook.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you. Good afternoon. An official in Italy has suggested a fire in a bar in a Swiss ski resort was started by a firecracker. Dozens of people are presumed dead in Crans-Montana, and Italy's ambassador says rescue teams are struggling to access the building because it's structurally unsafe. One witness to the aftermath of the explosion says many people put their own lives at risk to help those who'd been caught in the fire. Dominic Dubois was walking to the bar when he saw flames billowing out of the venue.
Many were able to help. Carrying bodies out of the fire. And yeah, I mean, many, many gory scenes. There were many who were very strong and who understood that their life was in grave danger, but decided that mentally it was more important to stay calm.
More than 41,000 migrants crossed the English Channel in small boats in 2025. It's the second highest figure on record, surpassed only in 2022. A Gloucestershire police officer has described his wife and two children as three of the greatest humans following their deaths in a house fire on Boxing Day. Tom Shearman tried to rescue his family but was beaten back by the flames near Stroud. The Pope has opened 2026 with a plea for peace, signalling out in particular countries bloodied by conflict. Pope Leo celebrated a New Year's Day Mass in St Peter's Basilica. And Enzo Maresca has left his position as Chelsea head coach after 18 months at the club. He'd been under pressure after a run of one win in their last seven Premier League matches. And for a roundup of news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
In areas overwhelmed by conflicts and natural disasters, we can't miss a life-saving moment. As a doctor with Médecins Sans Frontières, I've seen how a moment lost can mean a life lost. Right now, MSF is working across the globe, providing maternity care, containing outbreaks, performing vital surgeries. We can't miss a life-saving moment. MSF needs help. Your help. Every attack, disease, and natural disaster puts more people at risk and calls for our teams to go further and faster. Medical emergencies move quickly, so must we. £50 will keep our work going and make a life or death difference. The life-saving moment is now. To give £50, call 0800 055 7979. That's 0800 055 7979. Or search MSF Urgent. Thank you.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m. New Year's Day on Times Radio.
Welcome back. It's me, Dom Jolly. Ollie Mann is in the studio.
Hello.
Because he, like me, has shown up to work because he's a man. He's Ollie Mann.
Right. OK, I don't know if I should really make this about gender. I mean,
OK,
it's,
I
think work ethic is available.
As Ollie. Listen, we've only got 3 minutes.
Right.
3 minutes.
So I'll tell you what's coming up after four, then.
Please do.
I'll do two things. We can apportion 90 seconds to each.
OK.
So the first is, did you know that America is heading back to the moon this year?
No, but that's good, because all the moon doubters say, how come we never went back?
Well, I'm not sure the moon doubters will be pacified, because they're not going to land on the moon.
Just fly around it.
They're just going to fly around
it. A drive-by with Katy Price. Not Katy Price.
Katy Perry.
Katy Perry.
Close enough.
That would be good, though.
I would like to see Katy Price on
Katy Price goes around the moon.
On the Artemis mission.
We're waffling again.
We are, sorry.
It's me,
yes.
It's me.
What I was surprised, it's both of us. What I was surprised by is that the average age of the crew is older than me. I thought the average age would be like 40, but it's 50.
Over 21.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know how old you are, Ollie.
I'm 45 this year.
Well, you're looking very fresh on it, if
thank
I may say
thank
so.
You. That's very kind of you. Yeah. So anyway, we'll be talking about that. Why is America going back to space? But also, more to the point, why aren't they getting off on the moon? If it's all about sort of cultural dominance, surely they understand the vision. Visual thing you want to see is another moonwalk, right?
You want to plonk the flag in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is because they have to wait for Elon Musk to build them a launcher or whatever it's
and
called.
And he probably wants
you
to be the first person on it. Yeah.
I think that's... Again, Elon and Katy Price, I'm here for that.
Okay.
The second thing I want to talk about is what Emmanuel Macron has been saying in his New Year's address, which is, we will protect our children and our teenagers from social media.
Now, so he's doing in Australia?
He's doing in Australia.
Oh.
Under 15s,
yeah,
banned.
Right.
Schools, all the way up to 18.
18?
Banned. And what's interesting about it is his precarious position in French politics.
Yeah.
Despite that, it's an easy win for him.
It
and
is,
you think, well,
because they can't vote.
That's true.
It's not annoying them, is it? Means we're going to get a lot more French exchange students over here just looking at LinkedIn or whatever. Because Australia, they all went on LinkedIn. Can you imagine how dull your life is?
I've heard you say this.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm a LinkedIn fan, I'm afraid.
You're not.
I am.
Ollie, you and I are so different. You're so alike.
I just quite like the guardrails being taken away and people being like, yeah, we're all just here to see each other promoting each other. It's fine. I find it quite a friendly space. Anyway, we'll talk about that. Should it happen here?
No. We've got a minute. Give me something else.
Okay, fine. Well, no, I'm just kidding. The reason it won't happen here, I think, is because our government is so keen to woo Trump and the big American investors in tech, isn't
That's
it?
True.
All of our ex-politicians end up working for Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
We're trying to get investment from Microsoft and OpenAI. And that's the reason, ultimately, what it comes down to. It
Where
won't
would
happen
Nick
here.
Clegg work next?
Right. Yeah. And because of that, we're not going to have this. But clearly,
George
it's a
Osborne
vote winner.
Gone there as well. They all go off there,
OpenAI, yeah.
OpenAI, yeah. I don't know. Did you hear that thing about AI sending pictures of raw hamburgers so that you don't have to pay for your Deliveroo? It's that kind of stuff. That's the next bit.
That's
of AI.
Great.
Yeah, you just send a picture and say, well, it turned up and it was this size and raw. But see, that's the future.
I told you about short ticketing yesterday. Now you've told me how to cheat my way out.
You mustn't do that.
It's all illegal.
It's all illegal, but Uncanny Valley. Ollie, thank you so much. Really
pleasure.
Nice to see another human here. I've
Happy
got a lovely
New Year.
Team with me, but, you know, it's nice for you to be in. So thank you so much. That's Ollie Mann coming up after me at 4 o'clock. Now, as we say goodbye to 2025, many of us will take this time to reflect on the highs and the lows of the year. The Times columnist Robert Crampton has compiled a list of everything he found annoying throughout the year, from air fryers to lions and cyclists on pavements. And he joined me to explain why.
I try not to be a grumpy old man, but I'm 61 now, so it's proving more and more difficult with each passing year. And this year, I just kind of thought, I let rip. And it was on the basis of Nicky Haslam's tea towel that he does every Christmas, where he does a whole load of things on words and phrases and people on it that he deems are common. Now, I'm not, unlike him, I'm not a snob. So my list is not what I think is common. It's just things that sort of annoyed me, or things that were once okay but are now been a bit redundant or overused or meaningless. Or, and we're really down in the kind of nitty gritty here. We're not talking about Vladimir Putin or Donald Trump or, you know,
that's what I like.
Terrible.
There's nothing I like more than a petty grumble.
Yes.
Let's do it.
So this is very small stuff.
Okay.
I started out in this thinking about redundant phrases. First of all, I listed the ones where I agreed with Haslam, and they were air fryers, storm names, and we had a particularly bad storm name at the weekend, Storm Bram. Which they're always, you never get a Storm Steve or a Storm Dave, do you?
They're computer generated, I think, the names, and they have to go in alphabetical order, I think. But you never get Storm Panic Run to the Hills or stuff like that.
No.
It is, you're right. They're always a bit poncy.
Yeah, and it's done in conjunction with the Irish and the Dutch Meteorological Service, apparently, which is why you get these sort of the what I would consider weird ones getting thrown up.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
Air fryers, that I've been tempted 4 times now to get one, thinking, well, maybe everything is better with an air fryer. And
yes.
then you sit talking to someone who tells you how it's changed their life.
Yes.
And you think, right, I'm never getting one of those.
Yeah, and some of the air fryer is a good example of something that, per se, I really have much opinion about it one way or another. It's the level of discussion about it in the office.
Cult.
Yes, it's a cult. I work with a lot of people in their late 20s, early 30s, and they, you know, when they're not talking about matcha and kimchi, they're talking about air fryers.
I do like kimchi.
Oh, do you?
Say.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to let you down there.
Okay.
But yeah.
He also has them, and we're still on the ones that I agree with. And he doesn't like beef eaters. And
what?
Yeah, beef eaters. Yeah,
I don't like them either.
No, the guys. I never quite understood why they made me feel uncomfortable, and I still don't. But they're just. I don't know. I just don't like them.
I agree. I sort of feel they're people that have done something dodgy in the army and got locked at the Tower of London with some sort of pension. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe I'm jealous because they've got a very nice gaff on the. They all get flat in the Tower of London, don't they? And
name Beefeater is so naff for
a
start.
Yes, exactly. It's the name.
And their outfit looks a bit like an American's designed it.
Yes, yes. I'm sure
they're going to get so much anger now from this.
I'm sure they're a fine body of men, but it's the name, I think. It's probably the name is one thing. He also doesn't like clapping the chef.
Oh, who claps the chef?
Apparently it's a thing. It's a thing.
Where?
I don't know. At some sort of trendy places, they call for the chef and everyone gives him or her a big round of applause. I've never witnessed it, but I hope I never do.
That's like clapping when the plane lands.
Yes. Yes. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think the pilot's just done his job.
I'm with you on that. I think Haslam goes to different restaurants than I do. But
I think
that's possibly true.
There you go. And then we get into phrases. He doesn't like what's not to like, and neither do I. And that set me off with a whole load of other stuff that I don't like. I really dislike Let Me Be Clear, which is a Keir Starmer favourite. And sometimes he goes, Let Me Be Crystal Clear, as if somebody's trying to stop him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As if there's these sort of forces of obfuscation are saying, no, 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 Sir Keir, don't be clear. And he's saying, heroically, I'm going to be clear.
Always saying, I know I'm not normally, I don't make any sense.
Yes. But on this occasion.
You don't need to say it.
Yeah.
On this occasion, I'm actually going to try and say something clear.
Yes, and meaningful. And it's a real, real tick with him. There's another one that I've noticed with this government is at pace.
At pace.
We're rolling this out at pace, meaning they're doing something quickly.
That's gobbledygook, isn't it?
Completely. Pointless.
That's in the same sort of world as skill set and that.
Yeah. Well, there's a few of those going forwards. That's a sort of usual suspect. It is what it is. That's just gone absolutely everywhere this year. But sportsmen, athletes really like that one. And it sounds profound, but it's meaningless.
It's deep without a meaning.
Correct. I don't like bless.
Oh, I hate our bless.
Yeah.
So online. You know, in my comments, in the trolls I particularly can't stand are the ones that begin with "Oh bless."
Yes, you don't read your own comments underneath your own stuff, do you? That's insanity.
Oh, I spend my entire time arguing with people online.
Oh no, God, you must have a much thicker skin than me.
I love it. Oh, absolutely,
I just I can't do it. I just can't do it. It makes me don't like that one. Bless, and yeah, it's patronising, isn't it? As if they got secret wisdom that you haven't got.
It's the height of passive aggressive.
Yes. I don't like our forever home.
Oh no.
Everything happens for a reason. Which is just monumentally wrong. I mean, that's just a completely wrong attitude to life. Most things are entirely accidental. And you just bumble along and there is no reason. Yeah. The honour of my life. That's another political one. It has been the honour of my life to do blah. Yeah. Which has been lifted from Hollywood, I think. They say it's the sort of thing they say in the military in Hollywood.
It's also what they say just before they're pushed into the House of Lords.
Yes, it's been the honour of my life to be the Under Secretary of State for waste bins, and then off they go to spend more time.
And
with
off
their
they
family.
Go to an undeserved honour.
I don't like Happy Friday.
I've never heard Happy Friday.
Oh,
what's that?
Happy Friday. Do you not work in an office then? If you work in an office, you get Happy Friday quite.
No,
well,
I know about dress down Friday or casual Friday.
You get Happy Friday once a week.
What? I've never worked in an office, and I'm really glad I haven't.
No, yeah, well, that's... Yeah,
so what is that? What happens on Happy Friday?
It just means it's the end of the week. Happy Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, so, yeah.
It's just Friday.
Yes, yeah. Then we get into... I don't like as you do. You know, that's become a real...
As you do.
Yeah.
As you do.
That's one of those phrases that, like, maybe 20 years ago, that was probably quite witty, but now everybody says it. You know,
yeah, and it's a funny phrase that unfunny people use.
Correct, absolutely. Couldn't have put it better myself. I don't like Prosecco o'clock.
Oh, I don't like Prosecco. Full stop.
No, I don't like. Yeah. The people that brought you Prosecco o'clock also brought you Girly Weekend and Lads Night Out.
I feel Lads Night Out is quite a sort of long-standing.
Yes,
thing.
Yes, it is. It's not. There's nothing particularly current about it. I just thought I'd better, for balance, I'd put it in because I was really having a go at Girly Weekend. So I thought
you're just being diverse. Yeah, I think there is something a bit naffer about Girly Weekend
because
it's a bit patronising.
Yeah.
It feels like that's been made up by a bloke, actually.
Yeah, we're having a really girly weekend, and it's always going to a spa and going shopping, and it's as if that's all. It's as if
that's all women do.
That's all women do. Yeah, and then getting squiffy at Prosecco o'clock.
I hate those naff signs you put in kitchens that say, you know, it's always Prosecco o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. All of that stuff. Yeah. I don't like. I know this. I'm fighting a losing battle here, but I don't like uni.
That's interesting. Do you know where uni comes from?
No.
Neighbours.
Oh, really?
We used to all say university.
Yeah.
You're about the same age as me. Yes. I'm a little bit younger. I don't want to show off, but it was just as I went to uni.
Yes.
It went from university to uni, and that's because everyone on Neighbours used to say, I'm off to uni, and that's where it came from.
And that's what all the students were watching. It was a big thing when I was when I was at university. They watched Bullseye and we watched Neighbours.
I did watch Bullseye, but not religiously.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because the thing is now that older people, like my kids' grandparents, say uni to sort of sound youthful. And it just sounds weird coming from somebody in their 80s.
It just sounds totally weird.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
So they need to stop doing that. I don't like learnings instead of lessons.
Learnings?
Yeah, people say, well, what are your learnings from that meeting?
No.
Yes.
That's
that's office speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of LinkedIn speak, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Now, here's the one that was, I think, probably when it was first, when it was first used, was probably quite funny. Living rent-free in your head.
That's a very online thing, isn't it?
Yes. Now, that's quite a punchy phrase. But the problem with that is it's overused.
It's so overused.
Yeah.
It's very good, though, originally. So at least it's got thought behind it.
Yeah. Now, I don't like those, and this again, this is online, those sort of really try-hard nicknames for people, for politicians that people use online, like Kemi Bad Enough. Have you seen that?
And I haven't, but that's so bad.
And Tony Blyer, yeah.
Blyer is the most overused.
Pathetic.
That's kind of like, that's just a knee-jerk troll response.
Correct.
To anyone vaguely left-wing.
Yes, yeah. Tony and Rachel from Accounts.
That's nice. And two-tier Keir.
Yeah, that I've just got that as well. Rachel from Accounts, I think, is I can't quite work out why, but it is sexist, I think. But I think Never Hear Keir is quite funny, just because it's so blatant. It's not, you know, sometimes things are funny because they're not witty. They're just...
Yes.
They're just straightforward. Never
they're
Hear
on the
Keir.
Nose.
As the Times' is Robert Crampton reviewing a lot of his most annoying things of 2025, including lions. Stay with me. We'll be bringing you more of that in just a moment. This is Dom Jolly on Times Radio.
Alexis Conran on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers Travel. Go beyond the headlines and explore the human experiences at the heart of the week's news agenda with well-informed debate and thoughtful insight, tailor-made for anyone looking to broaden their horizons, not follow the herd.
Plus, get my expertly curated guide to the best the weekend has to offer, whether you're staying in or looking for adventure.
This Saturday afternoon from 1 on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers. Never stop seeking with WildFrontiersTravel.com.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
If you're a sole trader or landlord, you've probably heard of Making Tax Digital for Income Tax. It means you'll need to use HMRC recognized software like Xero to keep digital records, share quarterly updates, and submit your final tax return. But don't worry, new tax rules don't have to be a cause for stress. Xero accounting software can help you get MTD compliant and give you better control of your business finances. With Xero software, you can simply upload pictures of receipts on the go and send invoices with built-in payment options to help you get paid faster. With one subscription, you can manage multiple income streams, so everything you need is in one place for one price. See how Xero can help you save time and stay on top of your finances, all while making tax simpler, smarter, and more efficient. Change the way you see making tax digital with Xero. Search MTD Ready.
This is Times Radio.
Then I had a whole list of things that I sort of, I'm fairly indifferent about, but I just heard too much about them. Yeah? Dubai, for instance.
Dubai, I think Dubai is the single worst thing in existence at the moment. And I don't really mean the place, but everything around it, like everyone saying, I hate England, I'm off to Dubai.
Yes.
Everyone, every celeb who goes on holidays in Dubai.
Yes.
Everything, anything Dubai-esque is just everything I hate.
I mean, Rio Ferdinand's moved there, and so has Roddy O'Sullivan. And you think...
Well, for ages, Jim Davidson was exiled there. And that's when it was good, you know, like that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's also,
I like
Rhys
Ferdinand. I'm disappointed he went there.
Well, I like Ronnie O'Sullivan, so I'm disappointed.
Yeah, me too.
As well. Yeah, so
well,
that's
maybe
a shame.
They'll come back.
Also, it's worth pointing out that it is still a pretty repressive regime. It's a bit like going to live in Franco Spain in the 70s. You know, it's not or people who went to live in apartheid South Africa. It's not entirely.
It's basically going to live in a shopping centre in a microwave where you have to ignore the totalitarian regime.
Yes.
And as long as you do that, you can shop.
Yeah. The weather's only bearable for about 3 weeks a year.
Yeah.
I had a friend who worked in Qatar, which is quite nearby, and he said from March to about November, it was simply unbearable, the humidity and the heat.
It is, and I've been out there quite a few times. Yeah. I've got friends who are out there and absolutely hate it, but refuse to come back and pay tax.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then you deserve to live in an oven.
Fair point, I'm fed up with reading about celebrities involved in planning disputes.
Oh, that's very niche.
Very
like
niche,
that. I'm thinking Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran's always at it with his swimming pond.
He's always trying to turn another cottage in his Norfolk estate into a ping pong room.
And his wild swimming pond that is actually a swimming pool. And it's the...
Amazing.
And you get into the real minutiae of when does a pond become a pool.
And also the Beckhams, I think.
Yes, Beckham's been at it. That guy, what's his name? Martin Clunes, Men Behaving Badly. He's had a big thing with a bunch of people living at the end of his drive.
Oh, dear.
And I'm fed up with it. I'm fed up with it.
Yep. I think that's my favourite one. That's so niche, that one.
And
I
James,
love it.
James Corden had one with his bins. One in Highgate.
In his £12 million mansion wherever it is.
Yeah, he put down a massive load of tarmac for his bins. And of course, the people up in Hampstead or wherever it is, you can't put up a hanging basket in Hampstead without 50 people objecting to it.
No,
so.
It's terrible. They should all move to Dubai.
Yes, they should. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. This is another really niche one. When you're reading a film review, and the critic or the reviewer talks about a film being helmed by so and so as opposed to directed by so and so, it's a synonym. You know, when somebody thinks they've got to, they can't say director twice, so they have to have a synonym for it. And they say helmed by, and it just sounds, and it's a silly word anyway. That is very niche, but it annoys me.
Is that kind of insinuating they're more of an auteur?
Correct. And the person writing it is more in the know.
There is actually a fantastic website or Twitter site. I can't remember what it's called.
Is it called Second Mention or something?
Yes. Second Mention. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, the best one, of course, is... I mean, we all do this as journalists. The best one is the Pope, because, you know, you go pontiff, you go you go Vicar of Rome, you go descendant of St. Peter, Vicar of Christ, Vicar of Christ and all, you know, and it's just one after another.
The Vatican squatter.
Yeah, exactly. And you could just say Pope.
Yeah, I love that.
His Holiness.
Oh, I'm gonna, I've forgotten that. Brilliant.
Yeah. I don't like the idea that we're all encouraged to conspire in, is that the Prince of Wales is good looking.
I've never heard that.
Yes. The Prince of Wales, as in Prince William.
William. Okay, yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, I was still thinking Charles.
Yeah, the new Prince of Wales. No, nobody's ever said that about Charles, don't
think. I think he was good looking before he went bald, isn't he?
Well, I said he was good looking for about 18 months when he was about 18 and he looked like his mum.
Weren't we all good looking when we were 18?
No. Maybe. We were better looking than we are now. Charles still wasn't. We were better looking than we are now.
Yeah.
But, he was quite, in that way that sort of some teenage boys who look like women are attractive. Do you know what I mean? David Cassidy.
Or Duran Duran.
Yeah, Nick Rhodes, yeah. And that John Taylor
Nick
guy.
Rhodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was when Prince William was good looking for about 18 months, I would say. But there is a kind of toadying royal conspiracy that he's fabulous. And it's come up again because since he's grown the beard, he's got a bit better looking. And so that's that whole sort of shtick has come around again that, oh, isn't he? He's kind of gorgeous. And he's just not.
Is this Daily Mail stuff or generally?
I think this is probably a bit Daily. This is probably Daily Mail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't like, this is a bit London centric, but what the heck. I don't like the names for the new names for the overground lines.
Oh, I don't know these. Go on.
They are the Lioness Line, because that goes through Wembley.
That is terrible.
Yeah, the Suffragette Line. This is all very woke. The Windrush Line, the Liberty Line, the Weaver Line, which is because it's Spitalfields, it's where the rag trade.
And, I don't mind the Weaver Line.
No, I don't mind. That's the one that I came into work on this morning, and I think that's fine. And then there's the Mildmay Line. I don't like the sort of grammatical inconsistency of some things being places, some things being groups, some things being a movement, Windrush being, a boat, although, it's the Windrush generation and so forth. I think they could have chosen six things that were in the same category. Do you know what I mean?
That's interesting. Yeah, so you got a slight royal thing, haven't you? The Jubilee, Elizabeth, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not making their mind up. I like utilitarian, central, circle.
Yeah, I do too. I don't like the royal ones, although I'm pleased that everyone calls it the Lizzie line, so that's quite democratic, isn't it?
I genuinely believe the only thing that works in Britain at the moment is the Elizabeth line. I think it's the only great thing we have.
I think it's absolutely revolutionary. I was talking to a friend of mine who came up to see me for the weekend from Bristol, so he gets into Paddington, and he said it's just changed the whole complexion of London for him.
That's exactly what I do. I get in at Paddington.
Right.
I wouldn't even consider going past Oxford Circus before.
Uh-huh.
Now, all of East London is open to me.
Yeah.
East London, I'm coming.
It's all about infrastructure. It's all about transport. It's very and brilliant. Well done, everyone.
Can I just say this is my favourite discussion I've had all year?
Oh, brilliant. Fantastic.
I love a grumble.
I'm enjoying it too. Okay, here's one. This is a bit surreal. Lions, as in specifically male lions, not lionesses, but lions I think are shockingly overrated.
What, footballers?
No, lions. big, you know, king of the jungle. Actual lions, overrated. And I'm not saying I'd sort of fancy my chances against
them. You're pro the dentist shooting them then?
No, I wouldn't shoot them. That's just going from one extreme to another. I think the lionesses do all the work, don't they? They do the hunting and then the lion comes in to get the lion's share and eats it. So that's just not fair. But
do you think they've been sort of over-PR'd?
Yes, I think they don't punch their weight. I think that hair is ridiculous. The mane is absolutely ridiculous. And dare I say, a little bit effeminate.
Yes, they look a bit like George Michael.
Yes, or an old lady who's just been to the hairdressers.
Yeah, so lions are ponces, what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I'm well up with that.
Thanks. I mean, they don't ever come across tigers because they're on different continents, but if they did, your money's on the tiger, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, tiger. Yeah. Beat the nonsense out of a lion, yeah.
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 But then I decided I was all getting a bit negative, so I did put in a couple of things which I thought were counterintuitively things that people do moan about, which I think are okay.
Okay.
One of which is virtue signalling. And all virtue, it's always virtue signalling, it's virtue signalling. But actually, often all that is somebody who's like refusing to belittle or bully another person. What's wrong with signalling? It's better than signalling vice, isn't it?
Because basically they just say that whenever you say something they disagree with.
Exactly. It's become a catch-all just for anybody who's sort of refusing to bully or be nasty about somebody.
Yeah.
And the same goes for do-gooder. I never understood why do-gooder was a term of abuse, because it seems to me, I know people who you, sort of kind, generous, charitable people, who I guess you could consider them do-gooders, but that's because they're doing good. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. It is weird. I can sort of, there are certain do-gooders that maybe lean into the sort of hyacinth bouquet area.
Lady,
I don't know.
Lady Bountiful type. So it's just kind of sort of, it's a bit sort of feudal, isn't it? I suppose that's where it comes
from.
Yeah,
it's a little bit, I'm a philanthropist.
Yes. Yeah. But I'd rather somebody did good than bad. So
yes, as long as they pay tax.
Yes, exactly. Back to the real proper moaning. This is an absolute hardy perennial, but it's a massive problem certainly in London, and I'm guessing in other big cities too, is cycling on pavements. Now, I'm a cyclist. I might occasionally in my youth have cycled on a pavement, but if I did, I dropped my speed, I looked shamefaced, I apologised, and I certainly didn't bomb through a bus queue, as happens regularly to me when I'm waiting for the bus in the morning, on a quite high-powered, heavy electric bike.
You're talking my language here. I did a sketch 7 years ago, which has been much copied now, which is called Cycle Lane, where basically I put some GoPros on me and literally just decided that everywhere was a cycle lane. I ended up going through a library, through a restaurant, through an office, down the middle of a train, just shouting at everyone it was a cycle lane.
It is
a bit that.
And there's that entitlement. And now that, I guess also, when I was cycling a lot 20, 30 years ago as a younger man, people jumping red lights or going maybe just going onto the pavement was much less of a problem because there's so fewer people doing it. But now, which is a good thing, lots of people cycle. And with electric bikes, they're cycling on something that's pretty chunky if it hits you.
So, but also you've got the line bikers, don't you, who are sort of part-time bikers and don't know the rules.
And always look vaguely out of control, don't they? They always look as though they're only just in control of the vehicle. And they don't have they don't cover the brake with their hand, which is what you're supposed to do, you know, and you think this is, and they sort of wobble, don't they?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I don't like them.
That was Robert Crampton, the Times' columnist, talking me through his list of annoying things of 2025. If you have some of your own, just want to offload about what's got you riled up, then WhatsApp us on 0333 003 2353. You can text 87222, start your message with the word Times, or email us at studio@times.radio.
Okay, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock. This is still Dom Jolly. I'm with you for another hour and you're listening to Times Radio. Coming up in the next hour, 2025 may have been bleak at times, but there were a few funny moments. I'll be going through some of the best with Marcel Lucon, who's a French poet and philosopher. If you have any standout moments from 2025, you can WhatsApp us, as I said, on 0333 003 2353. But first, the news with Laura Cook.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Police in Switzerland say dozens of people are believed to have died in a fire at a party venue in the ski resort of Crans-Montana. It's feared many of the victims are teenagers. Officials are investigating whether the venue had exceeded the permitted limit on the number of customers. The Times reporter David Chazan.
What seems to be emerging from what witnesses have been telling us is that it was an accident, and investigators say it's too early to say whether the owners of this nightclub had breached fire safety regulations, but it is something that they will be looking at.
Under Swiss law, the number of victims can't be released until all the relatives of those killed or injured have been informed. Switzerland's neighbours are providing assistance. Italy's foreign minister has offered the use of a burns unit in a Milan hospital. President Macron has also pledged French support. This resident of the resort says she's very concerned for a person she knows.
I found out about this when I received messages from relatives asking if everyone in the family was okay. At that moment, I checked the news on my phone and realised the tragedy that had happened. I know someone who might have been caught in the fire and I can't reach her. I'm very worried.
In other news, more than 41,000 migrants crossed the English Channel in small boats in 2025, almost 5,000 more than the previous year. It's the second highest figure on record, surpassed only by the 46,000 people who crossed in 2022. Robert Bates from the Centre for Migration Control says it would have been more if the weather had been better in November and December. He also doesn't think government policies are having any effect.
The one in one out deal was obviously a failure with France. We had people that had been deported re-entering the country. We've seen Keir Starmer trying to get a deal with Balkan countries and been rebuked by most of them apart from North Macedonia. I think that's unlikely to have any real impact, and to see many individuals actually sent to North Macedonia for processing. So I would really, really be reluctant to say that actually anything useful has happened.
Ukraine's president is warning his country won't accept what he calls a weak peace plan. Volodymyr Zelensky says an agreement on ending the war with Russia is close. Hundreds of thousands of parents face losing special needs support for their children as ministers seek to cut costs. Spending on SEND by councils has doubled in the last 10 years to nearly £13 billion. A white paper to be published early this year will argue the system is unsustainable. But political correspondent Terry Stiadz says any change will be a difficult sell.
There might be great resistance to changing how the system works, particularly because a lot of parents with children in that system already have found it hard to get the extra help that they need, and being told that, you know, this is too expensive, we can't do all of this, we should handle it in a difficult way, might be something that is quite hard to push through.
There are warnings large parts of the UK could be blanketed in snow tomorrow. An amber weather warning's in place over northern parts of Scotland, while Northern Ireland, parts of England and Wales are under a yellow alert. And Enzo Maresca has left his role as head coach at Chelsea after 18 months in charge. He'd been under pressure after a streak of poor performances. For a roundup of news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Welcome back. Happy New Year if you've just woken up. Some of us have been working for a little while. It's Dom Jolly here with you for another hour until 4 o'clock. Now, updates are continuing to come out about the terrible aftermath of an explosion at a ski resort bar in Switzerland. We know that several dozens have been confirmed dead, over 100 injured, but the Italian Foreign Ministry has said information from the Swiss police suggests as many as 40 could have been killed. Here's former CNN Europe editor Nina Dos Santos talking on my show earlier.
The Crans-Montana region just put out an alert 2 or 3 weeks ago saying we'd like to remind anybody coming to this region to remind you that fireworks are banned over the new year. And the Swiss lawmakers themselves just 10 days ago in Parliament actually started debating banning fireworks across Switzerland outright. So there'll be a big focus on whether or not this could have been a candle, whether or not this could have been caused by something else like an electrical failure, or whether tragically it could have been some kind of sparkler or pyrotechnic firework display or something indoors.
Carmontana, the alpine ski resort town where this took place, attracts about 3 million visitors each year. The Times' head of travel, Claire Irvin, has lived and worked in the region and has been to the resort. Claire, you've been there. What can you tell me about what the area's like?
Well, yeah, I actually lived in Carmontana and worked there for 5 or 6 years on and off. And it has grown exponentially over that time. It's now it's two resorts merged together. It's a huge resort. As you said, 3 million visitors. But there remains, the community there is very close knit, as sort of mountain towns and villages tend to be. There are, I've still got very many close friends there. They're children now, whereas once we used to go and party, they now do that. There were some friends there last night. We're still waiting to find out how they are. It's just such a huge tragedy anyway. But it's really going to rock, obviously, all the tourists that know it and love it so well, but the people that live there as well.
Yes, I went there a long time ago skiing, but I as far as I remember, it's a big ski resort, also a lot of golf in the summer. What sort of people does it tend to attract, and where from?
Well, it's from all over the world, and it's Switzerland, it's expensive, it's certainly at the top end of that. As you say, there's an excellent golf, it's a big focus for golf. They have a massive, they've had the Ryder Cup there in the past, they have a massive golf tournament every year. So, you have everyone from celebrities through to very passionate skiers. The skiing's good. There's glacier skiing, so the season for that goes on longer. So my friends who live there said they've been contacted from people all over the world, because you just realise what an international resort it is when something like this happens, and you see the enormity of the effect it's going to have.
More coming out about the scenes in the bar when it happened, windows being smashed. You visited the venue a long time ago before it was a bar. Where is it exactly in the resort?
Well, it's at the epicenter of the resort. It's we used to go there every day. It used to be a kind of coffee bar. They'd sell beers and stuff. We would go for one reason or another every single day. And it's a real hub for tourists and locals, or it has been for tourists and locals alike. It has this elevated position in between. It's just on the edge, at the middle of the resort, but en route to the ski lift. So you can kind of see most of Kron from Constellation, from the terrace, but also, it's very busy because people are walking back and forth all year round. There's the ski lifts in the summer as well for walking and hiking. And I think it turned into a club maybe 10 years ago. The après ski culture has hit Crans-Montana as well. There's a lot of après ski bars. It's always had quite a healthy nightlife. And from what I remember, there's one way out, one way in and one way out. And it's a two-story bar. The basement used to be kind of a games basement with snooker tables and pinball and what have you. I'm showing my age there. And it's now been turned into a nightclub.
Thank you. Claire Irvin, their head of travel for the Times, who used to live in Carmontana, the scene of this terrible Swiss resort fire overnight. Now, moving on from that tragic news, 2025 was a big year for news itself, and it wasn't all bad. Some of it was actually quite funny. And social media managed to make light of some of the year's key moments, such as the Louvre heist. And I'm very lucky to have, as my next guest in the studio, a very old friend and a very amusing man on the French comedy scene, Marcel Lucon. Welcome to the show, Marcel.
Salut, Dominique.
We're going to keep it to English just because I don't think we have many French listeners, but your English is fine, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Firstly, I would just like to say thank you for turning up. You were actually booked in at 2:30, but I found out that you were in a restaurant and you told my producer that a meal must not be rushed.
No, priorities. You're lucky to have me at all. After last night, what we call in France, just I'm going to throw one French word in, if I may.
Absolutely.
Déchiré is
ripped up.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like a,
I'm not an idiot.
Piece of poetry ripped in two. Okay. Déchiré.
So you had a big night out, and obviously we'd booked you in at 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know if French radio is different from English, but when you book someone in at 2:30, you normally turn up at that time because obviously we have a schedule. You just thought, no, I'm in the middle of a meal.
Where I'm from, we have a phrase: better late.
Mm. Right. Okay. Well, I think that's one of the big differences, isn't it, between the French and the English? And maybe that's something we can get into. But it's been a weird year, hasn't it, in news, and a lot of it happening in your great homeland of France. Shall we start with the Louvre art robbery?
Yeah, of course. It is très bizarre.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. If I can remind people, it was a brazen yet well-executed heist on the Louvre, and it saw thieves disguised as workers steal 8 priceless French crown jewels, including tiaras, necklaces from Napoleon's era, valued at over $100 million. Arrests have been made since the robbery in October, but the jewels remain missing. I mean, first question for me is, you have crown jewels? I thought you'd got rid of your royal family.
Mm. Yeah, that remained. You know, they're easier to remove once the head has been removed from a monarch.
Okay.
It's easier to remove the jewels.
Okay, so that was the main reason for the revolution, was it? Just to get the crown jewels back?
Pop the jewels in a museum, yeah.
Okay, the Louvre is one of the most famous museums in the world. It's in Paris. It doesn't seem to have been exactly mission impossible to steal these priceless items. Do the French... maybe less security on their museums than us?
Look, it was a bold move, you know. It was... I don't like the word heist.
Why not?
Just heist.
You can't
is
say
not
the
a,
word H.
No, well, it's not a great French... Cambriolage.
Oh,
let's
nice.
Call it a cambriolage, huh?
A bit of burglary.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But this was more than burglary. I mean, there was a theory, isn't there, that you can pretty much get into anywhere in the world if you put a high-vis jacket on and carry a ladder.
It was
these
a
guys,
bold move.
Bold move.
Largest truck they could find with the largest ladder on that truck. And in a matter of minutes, just poof, there we are. Did it at 9:30 a.m. on a Sunday. You know, they waited half an hour for it to open, etiquette. And in they go, jewels in the pocket. They went down the ladder on a little elevator, just a boom. Boom, 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 just down there, casual
louche,
as you like.
I thought.
So louche.
Very louche.
Onto the motorbikes and into the sunrise.
Yeah.
Not even into the sunset. Daylight, broad daylight. The only way they could have made it more bold is one of them in round spectacles, bobble hat and a red and white striped sweater. You know, well, where is he? Oh, there he is. Oh, now he has gone.
It's incredible. I love that they did it at 9:30, half an hour after it opened.
Absolutely.
They probably originally planned it before it opened, and then maybe they were having a petit déjeuner. And they thought, we're not going to rush this. Let's just finish breakfast and then we'll steal the
priorities.
Priorities. It's very much a French thing. Now, the Louvre robbers were apparently one of the most popular Halloween costumes in France this year. Did you wear that for Halloween? What was your choice? Do you do Halloween? I don't know.
I'm not a Halloween man.
No?
You know, I don't wear... No, not so much. You know, I don't know. It's bizarre. Halloween used to, in my day, dress up as gruesome as you could. Not a sexy zombie.
Okay.
What it seems to be now, all of that bizarreness. No. I like the idea of them dressing up for the Halloween, and I assume there were many minor crimes trying to be committed, just, you know, stealing a ring from a window or something like that, you know, just as a tribute.
I get it. One of my favourite things, I don't know if you saw the images online of the fedora man.
Sure.
This was a photo showing a very well-dressed boy pictured near the scene of the crime. Many suggesting that he was a detective or private investigator or indeed AI or maybe just a French boy visiting his family.
I like that he added to the mystique, you know, because the jewel theft, retro, huh?
Yeah. Very Pink Panther, wasn't it?
Really?
Yeah,
if there's not a guy in a fedora somewhere, they've been doing it wrong.
What I like about France is that normally you just have, you know, people just standing by witnesses, but you have well-dressed witnesses. You have people in fedoras.
Exactly. Every part of it was louche.
Louche. I love the word louche. It's absolutely fantastic. Who should we give Fedora Man a go at recovering the stolen jewels, do you think? I mean,
look, the whole thing, feels like we are... I'm not condoning theft.
No, of course not.
I'm not the British Museum.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just the way it was executed, you have to admire the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of it, even it may be illegal, but sure.
How do you say it in French? The je ne sais quoi. How do you say that? Je ne sais quoi, I think.
Have a word for it.
Okay, yeah, it's a shame, but there you go. What about Sarkozy, one of your more effective presidents, I think. He did some time behind bars. He was in prison. 3 weeks of time of what was a five-year prison sentence for taking part in a criminal conspiracy. Still, he was busy. He wrote a 216-page memoir all about his 20-day incarceration at La Santé prison. Book of the year for you?
I am halfway through it, and not the greatest. I think the reason he did not become an author, but you know, that's what we do in France. We will not idle the time away. We will not be doing the press ups, not trying to build the biceps. We will use the hand instead to grab a pen and write literature, write poetry. That's what we do.
How can you fill 20 days of doing absolutely nothing in a low-security prison into 200 pages? Is this taking waffling to a new level?
Adjectives and adverbs.
Okay, that's good.
Many of those. But yeah, no, look, many talk of bringing back a bit of old-school French justice for the politician. You know,
more jewel removal.
No, the Madame Guillotine, of course. Yeah. And you know, not actually do it, but just, you know, in any press conference there, just have it wobbling in the back. Any lie that is told, it lowers a bit, and you know, just scare them off. The problem, of course, with the modern politician is the method of the guillotine is to separate the neck from the spine, and that final part, that's a problem for a lot of the modern politician.
Seem to be very into the guillotine thing. We've got a lot more to talk about. Stay with me. You'll get much more of Marcel's unique insight into 2025 in just a moment. You're listening to me, Dom Jolly, talking to one of my French satirist friends, Marcel Lucon. But it is 3:17, and this is Dom Jolly on Times Radio.
Global events.
There's a warning that the impact of climate change is getting more severe and we're not prepared.
Breaking news.
Following allegations of potential fraud raised by the Times.
Reactive analysis.
What's going on in the government about discussion of extremism?
From the world's best journalists.
We're trying to look at some of the questions about migration and the implications for the economy, jobs and public services.
On DAB, online, on the app and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Those who are curious feel an urge to travel, to explore the world. At Viking, we create voyages for the thinking person because travel enriches the mind and connects cultures in meaningful ways. With small, modern, all-veranda ocean ships that were designed to bring you closer to the destination, discover the world's iconic cities and quaint villages. Exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Right, brace yourself. At Co-op, you can get two pizzas and a tub of Ben & Jerry's for a fiver. Yep, a fiver. It's kind of a big deal, eh?
You're unbelievable.
Co-op. Owned by you, right by you.
End 2nd of January. Selected products subject to availability. Co-op, Group, Food Stores only. See co-op.co.uk for details.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
This is Times Radio.
Welcome back and Happy New Year. Listening to me, Dom Jolly, here on Times Radio. I'm with you till 4 o'clock. And currently, it's great to see a mate in the studio. I'm joined by Marcel Lucon. A lot of you might know him. He's a fantastic French satirist and a close personal friend. And he was up in London anyway, out on the town, I believe, last night. Slightly worse for wear, I would imagine.
Yeah, I woke up somewhere in West London.
Did you? Was that good or was that intended? Or
It's the right region.
Okay, well, that's good. And so he agreed to come and join us in the studio to have a look back at what some of the funny events in 2025. Obviously, once his lunch had finished, which went on a little bit longer, but it's not a big deal. Now, again, in France, great news for you guys, for the French. You sort of lack a gravitas, if you don't mind me saying so, with some of your French celebrities. But George Clooney has been granted French citizenship, along with his wife Amal Clooney, who's Lebanese, but now also going to become French, and their two children. Now, the actor said the privacy laws protecting children from paparazzi were a key factor in the family's decision. Have they been granted special treatment? Will Clooney make a good Frenchman?
Well, it's controversial for many because of the... He claims he cannot speak French fluently. And for me, I say the fewer Americans we have in France trying to speak the language, the better. I'm the opposite. I think he should not even try and learn. For me, the American trying to speak French is like somebody showed me a video once training a dog to say the word sausages.
Okay, yeah, that's a very English thing. Yeah.
Similar thing to me, you know. Okay. It seems impressive at first, but you would not have a full conversation with it.
No, because even if it mastered sausage, you're saying, where do you go from there?
Really? So yeah. Similar for me, Americans learning to speak French.
So you're happy with Clooney being French, but just he needs to be an English-speaking Frenchman.
Look, I'm happy to welcome asylum seekers into the country. He's fleeing from what is going on in his country, the awful scenes. And sure, but, you know, you can stick to American. No need to learn the French.
Speaking of America, that's another thing that went on this year, wasn't it? It was Donald Trump's the first year of his second term. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things he did, of course, was he insisted that the Gulf of Mexico be renamed the Gulf of America. I presume you French like to sort of hold things down. You don't allow people to speak English apart from George Clooney. You don't allow proper bans on French TV.
No.
You insist on rubbish French ones.
Look. You can keep your English channel, as you call it. We simply call it La Manche.
La Manche.
The sleeve. Yeah. Exactly. That's all it is to us.
Okay.
You are so insistent. It's the English channel. No, it's just a sleeve to us.
Okay.
So, you know, the Trump thing, I watched that with that in mind. It was his first round of presidential dick swinging.
Mm-hmm.
Dick dipping, I suppose, in the water.
I'm not sure we can say that on the radio, but it's
Richard
fine.
Swinging.
Richard it's swinging, the first. Yes. It's not his first language.
It's a name. I like the ownership of a body of water. That's mm-hmm. where he went first. He went for the water. Fascinating move.
Very, very good. Yeah, it's one of the things he likes. But you guys have never thought about renaming the channel. You don't really care about it.
Don't really care. It's just a sleeve to us. Okay. Let it go.
Okay. Now, I know one of your favourite things is, or one of your big bugbears is, and I quite like it personally, is wine in a can. I think I've always been very sort of annoyed, really, by wine in a bottle and it goes off. Whereas wine in a can, to me, is a perfect way of preserving wine. You've got an issue with it?
Really, it's an abomination. I do have a poem on wine in a can. If I'm not allowed to use abusive language, then it's not the place to do it here. But you can find it online.
Okay.
Wine in a can. I saw it first at a festival, British festival, you know, the degeneracy at its peak.
Oh, really?
At the British festival. You have not been?
Oh, I've been to Glastonbury and stuff. They're quite fun.
Yeah, but I bet you do. You don't. You know, every year they ask me to do Glastonbury. Do you wish to do the camping? Absolutely not. You know, of course. No, I do a thing called glamping.
Okay.
A portmanteau term, you know, means glad I did not go camping.
Okay.
I do the show and get out to civilization as soon as I can.
So it's not for you at all?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
What else happened this year? We had Lily Allen. Are you a fan of Lily Allen?
I'm aware of her oeuvre.
Yeah.
But, and
she's
I know.
She's like a sort of English Gainsbourg, I would say.
Sure. It's your right to say that. I'm not going to deny you that right. But, look, I'm going to say this. It was the breakup album, very direct breakup album to the ex. And I would say if you date an artist, if you are romantically linked to an artist, that's a hazard of that. If it ends, next album is about you, Simone de Beauvoir. The letters for ex-lover. She described, my heart is a kind of dirty soft custard inside. I have not listened to the Lily Allen album, but if any line is as good as that one, I would be quite surprised.
So you don't rate Lily Allen up against Simone de Beauvoir?
Yeah, we could say that.
You could say that. Okay. What about the Coldplay? Speaking of music, Coldplay Kiss Cam. Do you remember that happened this year? So it was one of the viral moments of the year. What did you make of that moment? Did you feel sorry for the couple that were caught?
Not really. I'm surprised to make such a thing of it for a Frenchman. A couple having an affair.
No big deal.
No big deal at all. They stole the idea from me. I don't think it's libelous to say.
Yeah.
At my shows, I used to have a frottage frame.
Okay. Where, so instead of a kiss cam.
Like a kiss cam. It was stolen and, you know, just taken the edge off, you know, the frottage frame we would have at the back of the shows and it would be there. Couples getting a little involved in the back rows. 9 times out of 10, an affair.
Okay.
Would get a cheer from the crowd.
If they both hold up
their own wedding rings, boo, you know, it's stolen from me. And look.
So you think you could have, you know, if you'd been caught in that Coldplay, I don't know if you're a Coldplay fan, I'd imagine not, but if you were at a Coldplay concert, would you be more embarrassed to be at a Coldplay concert or to be caught with someone that wasn't Mrs. Lucon?
Yeah, it's tricky. That's the thing. It was made most of, oh, they're having an affair, he's cheating, you know, rather than the true crime of being at the Coldplay concert.
Yes.
And we have to look. I'm going to say this in 2026. We need to reframe our notion of extramarital affairs.
In what sense?
Well, the wording around it, the language, you know, cheating. I think the people who call it
cheating,
cheating. Yeah. The cheating is, that's a phrase given by people who think, oh, look, you see, they seem to be having more fun than us. They must be cheating at life. You know, this is.
But aren't they cheating? I mean, they're in a marriage and they're being caught with someone that's not in the marriage. I thought the whole point, certainly in England, in when you marry someone, it's a commitment.
Sure.
That's a different thing in France?
Yeah, but we also have a thing called fun, joie de vivre.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, affair comes from the French, affair, and that's all it is, just going about our daily affairs.
So it's just business,
normal.
Business as usual.
Exactly.
Affairs as usual.
Exactement.
Okay, well, maybe we can learn from that. Now, there's something I didn't understand this year. I'm not sure you're going to know about it, but are you familiar with 6-7? 6-7 was a meme that infiltrated mainstream media in 2025, so much so that even our beloved Prime Minister got in the act.
6-7. Yeah. 6-7. Everybody... 6-7. Are you doing page 6-7?
We're not over that yet.
So I'm...
That's the level of numeracy in Britain now.
I'm
celebrating that you can count.
I think Keir Starmer went in to show that the Labour education policy was working and that kids could now definitely count up to 7. He was not only told off by the teacher, I think, for doing that, but I still have no idea what it was. It was just... children shouting 6-7.
It's a bizarre. I'm a more of a 6-9 man myself.
Okay,
but,
well, we'll move on that. But it's a 6-7.
6-7.
6-7. 6-7 is a lollipop.
Well, 6-7. Could have come from that. It's most things.
That?
Many things are stolen from the French. I would not be surprised at all if it came from that.
Like
a child just
Jules,
going
6-7. So you've no idea either.
No, but I enjoy that it is meaningless.
Okay.
Dadaism is back in schools.
Is it?
Apparently so. It means nothing.
Okay.
And adults, they're all the ones trying to place meaning. But it must mean something. The child, it's just idiocy. And look, nothing makes sense in the adult world anymore. Why should it make sense in the world of the child?
I'm beginning to understand Brexit a little bit. Le Boubou.
What did you call me?
Le Boubou. Sorry, it's a craze. I don't know if it's a French word. Le Boubou dolls.
It's La Boubou, I believe.
Oh, it's La Boubou.
You just misgendered it.
So it's a boubou and it's La.
La.
Okay, and La Boubou dolls.
It may turn Le at some point. And that's its right.
Totally it's right. If a boubou wants to Le or La, it's not for us to tell it what it is. But it was a big craze of 2025. Chinese toy maker Pop Mart, which frankly doesn't sound very Chinese, but who am I to say, are quids in after their cuddly toys, dolls became the must-have accessory. Firstly, have you invested in a La Boubou?
Look, I won't lie, I had to look this up.
Okay.
The La Boubou is not au fait with it at all. I've seen, you say cuddly toy, it's an evil cuddly toy. It's got the big eyes and the fangs and, you know, and the children are going for this around the world.
It looked a bit like Sarkozy to me.
It's got a Sarkozy.
It's Sarkozy-esque.
I say, look, this is what the children want. The evil looking little, it's like Bunny or something, you know, like that, which of course, as we know, children are evil, and this only goes
well, not
to
all children are evil,
prove it.
Is that that's a French feeling, is it?
You know children, you have seen children.
Yes, of course I've got my own children. No, I mean,
Then you are biased in a way. I think the hormones in the body of it's like Stockholm syndrome.
Marcel, was it a long lunch?
Sure.
Yeah, and you're not dry January-ing or anything?
Absolutely not. I'm on a little breakfast chablis right now.
Okay, all right.
I'm January.
Just a little note to production here. I'm not sure Marcel was the person to do this review of the year. It's been great to see you in here, but... I'm told you have a dinner reservation.
Dessert is waiting.
It is waiting, is it? Well, Marcel Lucon, thank you so much for joining us. Really, to get an incredible insight into the French mind there. That's Marcel Lucon. Alexis Dubas is his English name. Times digital subscribers can enjoy 20% off at the Times Bookshop. It features thousands of titles, which are available all year round, as well as great offers and recommendations from our literary critics. Explore that and thousands of great reads by going to timesbookshop.co.uk. Now, coming up, You can leave now, thank you. You can't stay here, please. The UK government is being questioned on its decision to strip Shamima Begum of her British citizenship. I will speak to a leading immigration barrister, and I'm doing dry Jan. Did I mention it? I will again, so I'll be learning how to survive it. But first, let's get a check on the latest news headlines with Laura Cook.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Police in Switzerland say dozens of people are believed to have died in a fire at a party venue in the ski resort of Crans, Montana. It's feared many of the victims are teenagers. Officials are investigating whether the venue had exceeded the permitted limit on the number of customers. Times reporter is David Shazan.
What seems to be emerging from what witnesses have been telling us is that it was an accident, and investigators say it's too early to say whether the owners of this nightclub had breached fire safety regulations, but it is something that they will be looking at.
More than 41,000 migrants crossed the English Channel in small boats in 2025, almost 5,000 more than the previous year. It's the second highest figure on record, surpassed only by the 46,000 people who crossed in 2022. Ukraine's president is warning his country won't accept what he calls a weak peace plan. Volodymyr Zelensky says an agreement on ending the war with Russia is close. Hundreds of thousands of parents face losing special needs support for their children as ministers seek to cut costs. Spending on send by councils has doubled in the last year to nearly £13 billion. And there are warnings of large parts of snow could be blanketed tomorrow, and amber warnings in place over northern parts of Scotland, while Northern Ireland, parts of England and Wales are under a yellow alert. And for a roundup of news on demand, find the Times News briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so for my ISA investment, should I pay a flat fee or a percentage fee? A percentage fee will get bigger as my stocks and shares ISA grows. But Interactive Investor's flat fee will stay the same, meaning I get to keep the money I make. Obviously.
It's raining.
For over 500,000 investors, the penny's dropped. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore II. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Daryl Morris wraps up the weekend's news and takes a look at the week ahead, Saturday and Sunday from 10 p.m.
New Year's Day on Times Radio.
Welcome back. You're still listening to me, Dom Jolly, here on Times Radio until 4 o'clock. Marcel Lucon has now left the immeuble, which is good news for everybody, but very nice to see him. Quite worrying, that yellow snow report, isn't it? We're always warned about yellow snow reports, so good luck out there with that. Now, coming back to the show, the European Court of Human Rights has asked the UK government to explain why Shamima Begum was stripped of her citizenship. Begum left London, aged 15, to join the Islamic State in Syria. She was later found in a detention camp run by Kurdish forces. In 2019, then Home Secretary Sajid Javid removed her British citizenship, saying the move was for the public good. He argued she could be eligible for Bangladeshi nationality instead. Well, following the European Court's demand for an explanation, the current Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, said she would defend that decision because Begum still poses a threat to national security. I'm joined now by lawyer Harjap Singh Bangal, who specialises in immigration and nationality law. Thank you so much for joining me. Begum's lawyers have argued that the UK failed to ask fundamental questions before stripping her of her citizenship. What do we know about the process that would have taken place at the time when the decision was made?
Well, it's admitted by the previous government that there wasn't much of a process in relation to evidence of her being trafficked, and that wasn't considered. And that's the argument that the lawyers are now taking. aboard and taking to the European court that will hold on why didn't the UK government fulfill its obligations in that respect and consider her to be a victim of trafficking because she was only 15 at the time. And there's some evidence to show that she may have been trafficked and assisted and groomed leaving this country. There's also allegations of Canadian intelligence being involved as well. So that's the sort of line that they're questioning. And the question was, it a failure of the state in that respect before making a decision to strip her of her citizenship?
Speaking to Times Radio Breakfast earlier, documentary maker Josh Baker, who's interviewed Begum, said she simply wants the right for her case to be heard in court.
I mean, Shamima has always said to me that she understands what she has done was wrong, but she wants her day in court, basically. She wants to sit and have it discussed, and she wants that right afforded to her.
That seems to me a reasonable expectation for her to have. If you are of a certain nationality, I just don't think the government can, you know, willy-nilly strip you of your citizenship. But if you've done something wrong, then put someone in court.
Yeah, and I mean, by all means, if she's found guilty, she could spend the rest of her life in jail if it's up to the judge who makes a decision on that. However, she's a British citizen, whether people like that or they don't like that. She was born in the UK. She hasn't held any other nationality, although the UK government argues that she might be eligible for others. But then so are a lot of British citizens who have Irish ancestry. So every time if a person with Irish ancestry or American ancestry, if they committed an offence, would you then strip them of their citizenship and leave them in no man's land? So there's an argument there, definitely. And also, if the offence we are alleging is committed against Britain as a whole, i.e. maybe even treason or, you know, plotting against the UK and its citizens, then surely the trial also should be heard in the UK, and a punishment should also be meted out by the UK.
She's repeatedly failed to overturn the deprivation order. Could renewed pressure from the ECHR change this?
It might not seem that likely. The courts have ruled various times on it. And remember, the judges are lawyers themselves or have been lawyers themselves, so each one would have considered it very carefully. Now, what she's done is challenged the decision. This isn't the European Court meddling. She's exercised her right, saying that a member state has, gone against a convention, and therefore it's the duty of the court then now to ask the UK and say, well, what's your argument against this? And then the court will consider, well, is there a case to be made? Is there a case to be answered? And remember, this whole process could take years in itself. It could take 3 or 4 years just to get heard. So, this is very much someone exercising their rights and every party involved going through the motions.
I've got a message here from a listener, Will, asking who is paying for Shamima Begum's lawyers?
We don't know. She might be privately funded. They might be legally aided, in which case anyone can put a request in and ask them, put a subject access request in and ask them how they're being funded for this. Is she eligible for legal aid? We don't know because she's no longer a resident of the UK. So she's not resident here anymore and hasn't been for many years. So it might be crowdfunding. We just don't know on this respect, and someone will have to ask her lawyers.
Is the Home Secretary right that she still poses a national security threat?
I'm not sure, and I think intelligence services will have to make their own assessment. However, deprivation of citizenship is a big thing. There's only been 12 cases in recent years. I mean, and that's a long, period. So you get even less than maybe one a year. So is she a threat herself? Not sure. What about the intelligence that she poses or the contacts that she has? Are they a threat? Definitely, from what we know from the evidence and her own evidence themselves. Should she be brought back to be debriefed so we can gather more intelligence? There's an argument for that as well. Or should we just deny her entry and access to the UK? There's an argument for that as well, which the UK is making.
Do you think she's become a sort of political symbol, a pawn, really?
Maybe. And I think so. I think we all know that there is agendas by political parties in regarding to immigration. And a day can't go by when we talk about immigration on the media. This is New Year's Day and we're talking about it again. And, you know, there's been two or three issues to talk about today in the news. So it's definitely headline news. But however, national security is important as well. And every country has a right to exercise that. And once again, if somebody, and this is the thing, was she freely, did she freely go or was she groomed? And if there are other people involved in this, i.e. other intelligence services, or there are leaks in the UK intelligence services and somebody from this country helped her escape and joined IS, then surely they should be discovered and these leaks should be plugged and prevention should be, you know, considered as to how this thing could be prevented. If she was that easily allowed to go and join IS, how many others are there that have done the same that could have been prevented and done when they were children?
And finally, how do you think this will all play out? What's your best guess?
I think that perhaps ultimately it'll all depend on the election and all depend on the politics and how the public opinion sways us this. If public opinion is dead set against it and the government see that it will affect voting in relation to election in 4 years, they will continue this stance as it is. However, the last government did exactly that, and it didn't really help them in the elections. However, immigration is a big issue. If immigration goes away in the next couple of years and Labour have been seen to have dealt with it, then they might consider bringing her back and putting her on trial and locking her up, as a lot of people suggest, for her part, her alleged part, in any crimes against fellow humans. So it will play out on public opinion and votes, as pretty much nearly every policy decision does nowadays.
But forgetting the politics for a second, we've got a message here from a listener called Ian saying, Dom, there's unlikely to be sufficient evidence to try Begum in a UK court. Try gathering evidence in a Syrian war zone. Is that a fair point?
Maybe. And once again, that might be a reason why the government doesn't want to allow her back, because if allowed back and put on trial and she gets off, that's egg on the face for this government. But it's also justice, and justice relies on evidence. Courts do rely on evidence, and it'll be a jury who makes a decision in relation to that. So the government should be prepared in the meantime to have that evidence, but they must have had evidence in the first place in order to deprive her of citizenship. So I would assume a lot of the evidence is already there. And there are bits that she has herself admitted to, and she's witnessed, and she's been party to, and she's seen her associates in IS carry out. So it will depend a lot on evidence, but we assume that this government does have a lot of it. If they are going to bring her back, you can be pretty sure that they will have enough evidence to bang her up, because the last thing they want to do, even if you do take the politics out of it, is to bring her back and for her to walk free.
Thank you very much, Harjap Singh Bangal, a lawyer who specialises in immigration and nationality law. Let's just have a quick look at some of your texts. It's not quite as angry as I thought it might be. There's one here from Jamie. Unity Mitford was allowed back into the UK after befriending Hitler and the Nazis in the 40s. Handyman says, as an old white guy with no axe to grind and no dog in the fight, I still think Shamima Begum should be allowed to come back to Britain. The Tories were showing off and trying to use her as some sort of ridiculous totem. She was trafficked and abused. It's ridiculous to refuse her day in court when everybody's in love with much worse people. Personally, I do agree. I think if you're a British citizen, you're a British citizen. You should not have your citizenship removed. But if you've done something wrong, you should be put in court. Certain people talking about my French guest. Seems to be a lot of love for Marcel, which I did not. It's very nice of you. We've got a bit of an entente cordiale going on. Love this guy. Reminds me of the taunter in Monty Python's Holy Grail, says Steve. Rosie, really enjoyed the session with Dom and the laconic Frenchman. Très bon. Stop showing off, Rosie, with your French there. And Mike Mitchell saying, Dom, this is either Joaquin Phoenix, I can tell you absolutely it wasn't, or Henning Wen's alter ego. Do this again. Well, actually, it was Alexis Dubas, who is a fantastic comedian. If you get a chance to see him live, he is very, very funny. I am Dom Jolly. It is 3:44. And yes, here we are.
Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts, and more. Times Radio Breakfast, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
At Aberdeen Investment Trusts, we create more ways for your money to work harder. Whether you're looking to tap into global markets or target specific goals at any stage of life, we have options for you. With Aberdeen, our investment knowledge and experience become yours. Search Aberdeen Investment Trusts online to learn more. When investing, please remember that your capital is at risk.
Issued by Aberdeen Fund Managers Limited.
Right, brace yourself. At Co-op, you can get two pizzas and a tub of Ben & Jerry's for a fiver. Yep, a fiver. It's kind of a big deal, eh?
You're unbelievable.
Co-op, owned by you, right by you.
Ends 2nd of January. Selected products subject to availability. Co-op, Crew Food Stores only. See co-op.co.uk for details.
This is Times Radio.
Well, welcome back. This is me, Dom Jolly, the last 15 minutes and it'll all be over at 4 o'clock and you can listen to the delights of Ollie Mann. Still getting texts in here. Chris Ely, what a surprise that the far left Jolly, far left, I'm a centrist dad, has a far left lawyer on to discuss the girl who found seeing severed heads a bit of a laugh. All we're saying, Chris, is if you are a British citizen, you should be given the rights of a British citizen. And if you've done something wrong, then get taken to court. I can't see what you can object to, but everybody can always object to everything. Let's turn to something else. I think I mentioned that I've now started my period of dry January, something that I can't stop mentioning. It's one of the problems of dry January. People tell you all the time. But with that in mind, the beginning of the new year, and for many in the UK, does mark that day. Dry January day one, and the health trend has proven so popular, Alcohol UK estimates that 17.5 million Brits will embark on an alcohol-free month. I didn't realise this was such a big club. But what real benefits does no drinking have on our bodies and behaviour? I'm joined by Rosamund Dean, health and wellness journalist and author of the book Mindful Drinking, and also by Tom Proctor, the director of the Alcohol Free Company, who's here to recommend some alcohol-free alternatives to help you through the January blues. So welcome both. What can just a few weeks off from drinking do for our liver, our physical body? Rosamund first.
Wow. I mean, it would be quicker to say what it doesn't do. There are so many benefits, more energy, sharpened concentration, fewer regrets. Obviously.
I'm feeling it already, Rosamund.
Yeah, I mean, extra disposable income, better skin, better sleep, stronger immune system, smaller risk of developing lots of diseases, including cancer. There's so many benefits.
Wow. So it sounds like I need to crack on after January.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, yeah.
Tom?
Yeah, so in terms of recommendations and that sort of stuff, winter months, dark beers are always a big winner. Lots of people that do drink always say to me, I've tried Guinness Zero, that was all right. And that will be available from most supermarkets. When you look at more sort of like specialist craft brewers, there's absolutely tons of different beers for you to try. You've got Firebrand, which is like a little Cornish brewer. They make a great non-alcoholic beer. Nirvana Brewery in Walthamstow, East London, they have a great range of beers as well. And that all sort of stemmed from them stopping drinking themselves. So they wanted to make really tasty beers for people to try.
I've done dry jam before and I have found some really good non-alcoholic beers, some very tasty, particularly Guinness is good, although it's like having a full pudding sort of thing. But the one thing that's amazing is sometimes they're almost more expensive than actual alcoholic beers.
Yes. There's a little bit of a non-alcoholic beers, you don't have duty. And a lot of people obviously read in the press that duty is the main thing that obviously puts up the price of alcohol. Whereas non-alcoholic drinks have different challenges. So they're produced a lot smaller. If you imagine Stella Zero as an example, it has its own glass, but they obviously don't produce the same amount of Stella in non-alcoholic as they do alcoholic. So you've got all that economy of scale. And a lot of the independent brewers obviously have to buy a lot of smaller products, and it's a lot more time consuming, often better quality products as well, which ultimately go into the cost of the final product, unfortunately.
Rosamund, do we see that those like me participating with dry Jan, does their relationship with alcohol change when they return to drinking? Do they drink less? What do we know?
Well, I think people go one of two ways. They either love the experience of dry January so much that they keep it up and drink less alcohol overall, or, and we've all seen this, the kind of sheepish slide into what I call wet February. it can go the other way. So it depends on the person. I mean, ideally, you would reset your relationship with alcohol and in that time realise that you can do sober socialising, you can manage your difficult feelings sober, you can, you know, go on a date sober, all those things that you think you can't do without a drink. Ideally, you would learn that you can do those things. And I think what can happen is in January, people kind of hibernate and they don't go out and live their normal life. And they don't think that they could continue to live their normal life without drinking. So I think you have to have those experiences of sober socializing to realize that you can, because you definitely can. People think they need alcohol as a crutch for those situations. But actually, once you do it a few times and you realize that you can, it becomes easier, and not just easier, but actually better. It's more fun. You're more, you know, you have your wits about you. You can remember the names of your friends' kids or whatever it is. You know, you're a better friend, a better listener. You can remember the evening as well the next day.
That's interesting. I've got a text here from a listener, Richard. He asks, what does your panel think of the current trend towards functional mushroom alcohol-free drinks? Not quite sure what a functional mushroom alcohol-free drink is, but there is a sort of mushroom trend going on. Is that okay if I'm dry Janning? Can I do functional mushrooms?
Absolutely. I would say so. It's not alcohol. It fits in with dry January. And some of these, so functional drinks are drinks that kind of perform, you know, they sort of scratch that itch that alcohol might do. And some of them use medicinal mushrooms like lion's mane or reishi. Some of them use other, you know, there are CBD drinks and that kind of thing. And I think lots of those can be great tools for if you miss that kind of, you know, that kind of opening of a drink ritual at the end of the day to segue into the evening. I think they can be great for that.
I really, when I did dry Jan last time, one of the really interesting things was exactly that. It was a ritual thing. And actually, if you did open a bottle of non-alcoholic beer and pour it out, it kind of, I did realise that a lot of it, that was just giving me the feeling I was after. I'm still a bit rubbish socialising though without it, I have to say. I need a bit more training with that. Tom, do you think the stigma of ordering non-alcoholic beers has started to disappear at pubs?
It has to a certain degree. I mean, I haven't drunk for 14 years. So a lot of, well, I gave up when I was 24. So I spent a lot of time in pubs ordering non-alcoholic drinks. The choices have got better. There's a couple of local pubs to me which have some more craftier beers on tap. Overall, I would say the general consensus is it's perhaps not as good as it could be. There's some brands there's better out there, shall we say, than some of the big name brands that have graced the shelves before. I think a lot of the pubs, bars, restaurants, that sort of stuff could really have a look at what breweries, what wines are made local to them, and perhaps offer a bit more of a local choice, because that would really go down well with their customers.
Rosamund.
Yeah, and I would add to that yeah, if you're not a beer drinker, then there are definitely fewer options, because alcohol-free beers are definitely more successful, I would say, than alcohol-free wines. And I would love to see like a kombucha behind the bar, or just a variety of different options that are not like, you know, a Coke or something.
Yeah, it is odd. I mean, I find the whole concept of sort of non-alcoholic gin quite strange. You're sort of having a gin and tonic, but there's no alcohol in it. I sort of wonder, we need to maybe It's a bit like when you go vegetarian, but all the food is still in the shape of a sausage. And I wonder whether we need to really think out of the box with non-alcoholic stuff.
It depends really why you're drinking. I mean, like the non-alcoholic gins as an alternative. If you like that flavour of juniper, then obviously you'll gravitate towards them. I think a lot of people need to assess their relationship with the alcohol in the first place and realise why they're drinking. If it is to get drunk, then non-alcoholic drinks may not necessarily be for them. If it's because they like the taste and the flavour profile and that sort of stuff, then there'll definitely be some gems in there that they can try to sort of take away the need or the craving for non-alcoholic drinks, for alcohol.
I've got another text come in here from a gentleman called Garvin, which I quite like. He says, as a retired drinks co-chair, could I pitch getting me on this panel next time? I think you've got a gap among your guests there. No one being honest about the joys of a pint or claret or a Jack Daniels with an old pal by the fire. Oh, it's day one and you're making it difficult for me already, Garvin. What are your feelings about that?
Well, I'm not anti-alcohol.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed drinking in my youth. I just can't be trusted with it. So I'm much happier with my decision since I've stopped drinking. That said, I would say 50% of my employees drink. My mum and dad still drink. My wife drinks. I'm not anti-alcohol. There's a time and a place for it. As I've grown up, I've got kids and obviously businesses and whatnot. I don't know where I'd fit in possibly, but yeah, each to their own.
And I feel like as you, I am also not anti-alcohol. I'm a mindful drinker, so I drink very little, but I do drink occasionally. And I think you've got to think about the reason why you're drinking, because as you say, the alternatives are so good now. Is your enjoyment of an evening really because you're drunk? Is that really why you're enjoying it? Or is it not more about...
Probably, Rosamund, to be honest. Probably. I don't know. I'm just trying to think back to last night, and I can't remember, to tell you, because I had my last hurrah last night. Listen, guys, thank you so much for coming in to chat about that and helping me on my day one of dry jam. But I will definitely do it, and I think it's very interesting. And last time I did it, I really, really enjoyed it, and I did see the benefits. So thank you very much, both of you. That was Tom Proctor, the director of the Alcohol Free Company, where you can find a whole selection of alcohol-free beers, wines and spirits. I should have given him my address. And Rosamund Dean, a journalist and author who specialises in human behaviour, popular culture and relatable wellness. Ah, you want that relatable wellness. I hate that unrelatable wellness. Ollie Mann's come in again.
He can't
keep
me down.
Out the studio here. So we got 3 minutes till you're on. Dry Jan appeal?
I mean, obviously, health appeals.
Yeah.
But so does alcohol. That's my problem.
That's the problem, isn't it?
It is. There's a reason I drink every day.
Yeah. Which have you ever done it? You've ever done dry Jan?
I've stopped drinking for periods of 2 or 3 weeks when I've thought, I get gout. So when I get gout
as well. Look at this. Yeah,
well, Gout Brothers.
Where'd you get your gout?
Doesn't it always gather in your feet? Have you had it anywhere else? You had it in your knees or something?
I haven't. No, I get it in a particular joint in a foot and I start limping.
Yes, in the foot.
I didn't know. It sort of crystals anyway. But we're not going to talk about gout at the end of the show. I'm not going to. I refuse to talk about that.
We should be passing around the port, as we discussed.
Passing around the port, so, watching musicals. Yeah.
So we've disagreed on musicals past few days. We've disagreed on Disneyland.
Yeah, we have. Very much so.
Regarding your earlier comments on Dubai, Dom.
Dubai.
I'm going to have to disagree a little bit there as well.
Well, I know more about it than you do because I've been there too many times.
Okay.
And I'm right. Well, it's an awful place.
I'm going there in February for half term, and I'm going because it's sunny.
Listen, there's lots of places you can go if you're sunny. I understand why your kids want to go to that wet and wild place.
Yes.
Which is fine. Yeah. But honestly, it's blue water shopping centre in a microwave. That's all it is. It has no culture.
It's got decent food.
It has got decent
food. Had a well-priced resort, Tom. That's why I'm going.
No, I totally get that. But I would just say to you...
Sorry,
you did just call me Tom, but that's absolutely fine. You can. I just think as someone that grew up in the proper Middle East, in Lebanon, I'm not suggesting you go to Lebanon, although you should. That's where I'm taking my family for a walking holiday in February. That's proper food. That's a proper place.
Lebanese cuisine, when I'm in a shopping centre, is always my personal choice.
So we've agreed here.
We can agree on
Lebanese
that.
Lebanese food, that's what we're at.
Folded feta cheese
Brilliant.
And pastry.
Listen, have a good show. Have a good New Year. That's it from me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much to my production team for working so hard on New Year's Day, genuinely. My producer was Amelia. Isaac was my tech operator. I'll be back tomorrow from 1 p.m. But up next, It's the mighty Ollie Mann for Times Radio Drive.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online, and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
It's 4 o'clock. You're listening to Ollie Mann here on Times Radio Drive. The headlines: several dozen people are feared dead and around 100 injured after a fire in a bar in the Swiss Alps. And Chelsea Football Club have parted company with head coach Enzo Maresca. Coming up on the show, a Times exclusive about Nigel Farage's plans to spend more than £5 million as part of Reform's local election campaigns. I'll speak to Reform UK commentator Tim Montgomery and also to a former senior advisor to Keir Starmer about Labour's strategy for those crucial May elections. Plus, we'll be in New York City Hall, where Zoran Mamdani is holding an event to mark his first day as the city's mayor.
This is Times Radio.
All that to come, but first, the latest news with Laura Cook.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Several dozen people have been confirmed dead and over 100 injured at a fire in a bar in the Swiss ski resort of Crans-Montana. Under Swiss law, the number of victims can't be released until all relatives of those killed or injured have been informed. But the Italian Foreign Ministry has said information from the Swiss police suggests as many as 40 could have been killed. Former CNN Europe editor Nina Dos Santos told Times Radio what's being said about the cause.
The Crans-Montana region just put out an alert two or three weeks ago saying we'd like to remind anybody coming to this region to remind you that fireworks are banned over the new year. And the Swiss lawmakers themselves just 10 days ago in Parliament actually started debating banning fireworks across Switzerland outright. So there'll be a big focus on whether or not this could have been a candle, whether or not this could have been caused by something else like an electrical failure, or whether tragically it could have been some kind of sparkler or pyrotechnic firework display or something indoors.
The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, is promising change will finally arrive in 2026. In his New Year's speech, he conceded his government hasn't yet delivered on the promises made in their election manifesto. Starmer says there'll be more police on the streets by March, energy bills will go down, and there'll be more funding for local communities. But former Labour MP Simon Danchuk thinks it's too late, as he's already lost the public's trust.
Starmer's just reading out a list of relatively small policies and giveaways, isn't he? He's lost the audience, he's lost the crowd, people are just not listening to Starmer anymore, and I think that includes his backbench Labour MPs for that matter. I think we're going into 2026, he's desperate.
The leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, is planning to spend more than £5 million in the run-up to this year's local elections in what's being seen as a major campaign gamble. Times Radio's Rob Malarkey has been assessing what's at stake.
This is a big roll of the dice for Reform UK, with the party having already sent more than 5 million leaflets to homes in parts of London and every household in Scotland and Wales. And an extensive social media campaign will directly target those voters who did not go to the polls in 2024. Farage said he wanted to spend every single penny in the account and admitted his own position would be at stake if he failed to make a breakthrough in May.
Ukraine's president is warning his country won't accept what he calls a weak peace plan. Volodymyr Zelensky says an agreement on ending the war with Russia is close. A police officer whose wife and two children died in a house fire on Boxing Day says he can't begin to describe his heartbreak. Tom Sherman was beaten back by the flames when he tried to save his family from the blaze in Stroud. In sport, Luke Littler admits he still has some learning to do after he lost his head when reacting to the hostile crowd during his fourth round PDC World Darts Championship win over Rob Cross. The 18-year-old was booed and jeered. Luke Littler says it's all part of his development.
2 years ago, I think I would have started throwing my darts left-handed, to be honest. But that's how much I've grown, that's how much I've matured. And yeah, people might not say mature, but try and be in my position.
And for a roundup of news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. Drive on Times Radio.
Happy New Year. It's 4 o'clock. Ollie Mann here, in for John. On Times Radio, Drive with you through until 7 tonight. Hope you had a fabulous evening celebrating last night, if it was a gentle one. Then I hope you have enjoyed your first day of 2026. If you had a heavy one, good morning. Welcome to The Breakfast Show. Also, happy birthday to anyone whose birthday is today. Literally, I think, literally the worst day to have a birthday in the entire calendar. Well, apart from possibly February 29th is a contender, isn't it? But even that has novelty. No one wants to celebrate today. No one has any money. Everyone's like Dom Jolly doing dry January. Horrendous. Although, of course, New Year's Eve, not much better. It was my mum's birthday yesterday, 21 again. Even that's a day where, yes, everyone's out, but everything's really expensive and nobody is there for you. Anyway, happy birthday, Mum. Coming up today in Ollie's Army at 6, a prestigious panel indeed. Anne McElvoy and Adam Bolton will be joining me for the last hour of the show. Looking forward to getting their thoughts on the big stories of the day. And after 5 this afternoon, we're going to be crossing the Atlantic to New York. Zoran Mamdani has been sworn in there on a copy of the Quran, of course, their first ever Muslim mayor. Also worth saying their first millennial mayor and their first South Asian mayor. What will all of that mean for American politics in 2026? We'll discuss as well President Macron's plans in France to copy the Australians and ban social media for the under-15s. And in this hour of the show, before 5 o'clock, we're going to discuss America's plans to return to the moon. This is happening in just a few months' time. I'd love to hear from you as well. If your child receives send provision at school because the UK government is seeking to curb the admittedly skyrocketing cost of provision for children with special educational needs and disabilities, what might that mean for you? It does include me, by the way. My son is dyslexic, so has some send provision. That's what we're kind of encouraged to apply for in the system we have at the moment. I admit that is, if you like, a minor concern compared to serious mental health disorders or disabilities. What might it mean for you? Let me know. 87222, start your message with the word Times. On social media, we are at Times Radio. You can email us studio@times.radio. And you can send WhatsApp messages, pictures and voice notes to 033-003-2353. And I'm not going to be reading out New Year shout-outs, but if you would like to write to me and just say, hey, Ollie, Happy New Year, I read them all. I'd appreciate it. 87222, start your message with the word Times. First today, though, the very grim news we've been reporting all day, of course, from Switzerland. Several dozen people are now feared dead and around 100 injured after a fire in a bar in the Swiss Alps on New Year's Eve. The cause of the fire at La Constellation in Crans, Montana, is unknown, but terrorism has been ruled out. Here's a witness describing what he saw.
I seen the fire inside, screaming, and a lot of people without hair, because they were burning.
And this man described what his brother saw as he passed by the bar last night.
He saw the mess and tried to give his first help to the people, giving his jacket to some people, helping with other friend to take people out from the bar, and he told me that he was very, very bad things, seeing people burn and stuff like that, so he tried to help as much as he can.
Well, the country's president, Guy Parmelin, has delayed giving his New Year's address out of respect for the grieving families there. Martin Moyle is a reporter for Swiss news service Blick. He's in Crans, Montana. Hi there, Martin.